From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come past the 16th. It's Mandaloon. Mandaloon, Proxy and Midnight Bourbon with Faron Giroux. It's Mandaloon. And Mandaloon wins the Risen Star Stakes.
He was 4 weeks back to the Risen Star off the LeCompte. We're coming back in 5 weeks to the Louisiana Derby now. If all goes well, we'll have 6 weeks before the Kentucky Derby. So I think he's continued to move forward in every start. We're looking for another move forward. And, you know, he's a good workhorse. He gives you what you need and what you want to see in the morning to feel like you're fit when you lead him over there. And I feel like at the end of the day, you know, he's cut out to be a mile and a half horse, especially with the Empire Maker on the bottom side. So I feel very confident that as long as we can show up and do what we need to do and take care of business on Saturday, that, you know, we'll be able to move forward to the Kentucky Derby.
It's still Midnight Bourbon, past the 16th. Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon, Vince LeCompte.
Obviously, in the LeCompte, we had a really good trip. He was able to get out on a pretty easy lead that day in Wyrum. But in the Risen Star, I was real happy. I was real happy to see him. He sat off of Right and Just, who's going to be in the Louisiana Derby this time, too. But I really, more than anything, I love his post, too. Because, again, if someone goes out there, he's definitely pretty content laying second or third. So just going to be one of them races. Hopefully we can just get a good trip and take it from there.
But Be Nice is well clear with 70 yards to go, and it's win number 5,000 for the gentleman jockey, DeShawn Parker, wins by about 5 to sweet sound.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, it might surprise you to find out that jockey DeShawn Parker has ridden 5,843 winners in a career that has led the 50-year-old Cincinnati native to being named the recipient of this year's George Wolfe Memorial Award. That announcement being made by Santa Anita this past week, just 2 weeks after DeShawn lost his father to cancer. He referred to his dad as his idol and his best friend, so you can imagine how emotional he was when he received the news that he would be honored with such a prestigious award. And DeShawn will be with me in the final segment of today's show at 10:40 Eastern, the Gentleman Jockey. It's an interview you absolutely will not want to miss. An official good morning and a very happy spring to all of you throughout HRN Nation. Welcome to yet another jam-packed edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum. It's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, as always. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, fired up, if you can't tell, a little fired up for today's show. With you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. This is, of course, Louisiana Derby Day, and all eyes will be on the fairgrounds in New Orleans. All eyes will also be on the reigning Eclipse Award-winning trainer Brad Cox as he looks to go back-to-back in the Louisiana Derby with the 8-5 morning line favorite Mandaloon. Now, this is the lone Derby points race being contested this weekend, and historically, this really hasn't necessarily been the place you want to be if you have plans of wearing the roses on the first Saturday in May. Only four horses have prepped in the Louisiana Derby before winning the Kentucky Derby. Most recently, in 2019, Country House, who was fourth in the Louisiana Derby, and then, of course, was put up via disqualification for the victory in 2019 in the Run for the Roses. You come back to Funny Side in 2003, who was second in the Louisiana Derby. And then Grindstone in 96 and Black Gold in 1924. Both of those horses won the Louisiana Derby and then won the Kentucky Derby. They are the only two horses in the history of that race to do it, to win both. Mandaloon's only losing effort in his four lifetime starts came in the LeCompte on January 16th. But he certainly redeemed himself in a big, big way last time out in the Risen Star, beating many of the same rivals he's going to face later today. His late pace number, and as many of you know who continue to listen to this show, and thank you very much, who continue to listen to this show week in and week out, you know that I am a huge proponent of the Brisnet Pass performances, and I love the late pace number that they include in their PPs. It just kind of gives you an indication of how the horse was finishing relative to his other rivals in that particular race. Like anything, like any speed figure. It's not a guarantee, but I love him. I've had a lot of success handicapping using those late pace numbers. Mandaloon's late pace number in that last win, the Risen Star, was not what I would consider to be strong. It was average. It was 88. As opposed to his previous two starts, which were 99 and 96 respectively. Believe it or not, his best late pace number of his career, indicating the race he finished best in, was in the race he got beat in the LeCompte. That's where he ran the 99. So you have to kind of interpret these relative to the race and the way the things unfolded. Because when you look at Mandaloon's last race, even though his 88 late pace number in the Risen Star was, again, average, he also had much higher early and middle pace numbers in that Risen Star win, indicating that he pressed a legitimate pace throughout the entire race and still had enough left to score by 1.25 lengths. And nobody was, I mean, go back and watch. They weren't getting to him at the end necessarily. Proxy, who was second behind Mandaloon in that Risen Star, is going to take another shot at turning the tables on his rival later today. He found a way to finish in front of Midnight Bourbon last time out, but was no match late for Mandaloon. Both Proxy and Midnight Bourbon return for the rematch later this afternoon. Should be a good one. Jockey Joe Talamo is going to be here with me at 9 o'clock Eastern to talk about what he can do to get Midnight Bourbon to the Louisiana Derby winner's circle. Trainer Mike Stidham will be with me to share his thoughts on Proxy coming up at 9:25 Eastern. So I got you covered there. I'm also going to preview four graded stakes on the Fairgrounds card today, and that card is loaded. Going to be joined by Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires in about 7 or 8 minutes after my first commercial break. So I've got you covered from all angles on the Louisiana Derby here, HRN Nation. I'll tell you what, just go ahead for the next couple of hours, next 3 hours, up until 11 a.m., you can call me Baron of the Bayou. How's that? Because I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about that Louisiana Derby. And again, we'll hear from some of the participants. We'll hear from Ed DeRosa handicapping it. And today, you know, outside of Louisiana, there is racing going on, believe it or not. Today is also Texas Champions Day at Sam Houston. Announcer Chris Griffin will preview their big day later in the first hour. He'll be with me about 8:35 Eastern time. So here's what's coming up. The full menu, if you will. Ed DeRosa at 8:15. Chris Griffin from Sam Houston, 8:35, right after today's first bet. Joe Talamo, 9 o'clock Eastern. Mike Stidham, 9:25, following this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds, which is presented by Spendthrift. At 9:40, you'll hear another special edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, as I welcome longtime Shug McGahee exercise rider Lena L'Oreal, who began working with Shug in 1984. I'm pretty sure she's been aboard a few good horses. She'll tell you all about it at 9:40. 10 o'clock, we'll go in the room with Sean Clancy. Another segment, trust me, folks, stay with me. You don't want to miss this one. Sean goes in the room for a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with none other than the legendary Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez. That's going to be fantastic at 10 o'clock. 10:20, Kurt Becker brings you his weekly stroll through racing history, which is presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:40, I'll welcome jockey Deshaun Parker to talk about being honored with this year's George Wolfe Memorial Award. Told you it was a loaded show. We're going to cover a lot of ground and really looking forward to it. Poll question today. Let's keep it simple. You can go to @ HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. The Equine Forum poll question of the day. Who is your pick to win today's Twin Spires Louisiana Derby at the Fairgrounds? I'm going to give you three choices and then an other category. And if you choose other, please comment. Let me know who you think the winner is going to be outside of the other three. Mandaloon, Proxy, Hot Rod Charlie. Those are the three morning line favorites. Mandaloon, Proxy, Hot Rod Charlie, and then other. And again, if you choose other, let me know. Early votes coming in. Looks like Proxy is leading the way Not Mandaloon, the morning line favorite. It's Proxy. And as I say that, Mandaloon pulls even. So it's Mandaloon and Proxy. Go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Let's have some fun today, HRN Nation. And let me know who you think is going to win today's TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby. All right, huge show. Very busy. It kicks off with Ed DeRosa from TwinSpires next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Al Must. Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of Stakes.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They've straightened. Three quarters was 112.42. The longtime leader is Wells Bayou. New York traffic drifts off that line. A furlong out from Wells Bayou, who's still finding. Lanes by three to New York traffic. Bottleness is a one-pace third. Major Fed, enforceable takes toward the inside, but it's Wells Bayou. Wells Bayou in New York traffic. Wells Bayou to win the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby. Held New York traffic. Bottleness was third. Major Fed fourth across. Enforceable was fifth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRR. And Sean G. Dooley, the voice of the fairgrounds, with the call of last year's Louisiana Derby. Wells Bayou, remember him? Wells Bayou getting the victory for trainer Brad Cox. Brad en route to a champion trainer title with that Eclipse Award last year. He's going to look to go back-to-back here in 2021. That comes up later this afternoon, and looking forward to this year's Louisiana Derby. Again, should be a good one. Great showdown between Mandaloon, Proxy, Midnight Bourbon. You throw Hot Rod Charlie, who comes in from the West Coast. We know that the horses on the West Coast, at least the Baffert runners anyway, have proven to be legitimate. And now we'll see if Hot Rod Charlie can step up. Of course, Leandro Mora is the trainer of record, the longtime assistant to Doug O'Neill. Doug serving that suspension. So Leandro will be there to saddle Hot Rod Charlie later this afternoon. Again, huge day at the fairgrounds. Four graded stakes. There are several stakes races, but four of those are graded. It kicks off with the New Orleans Classic in race 11, and nobody has their finger on the pulse of racing in New Orleans and with any Twin Spires owned entity and Churchill Downs owned entity like Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com and Twin Spires. He's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ed, what's up? The Duke of Degeneracy. What's up, brother?
I'm just looking forward to some breakfast before I head to the track.
Well, I got you up early today. I originally
did.
Said, hey, what do you think of joining me at 9 Eastern, 8 Central? And I think you were happy with that time. And then Joe Talamo bumped you out of that slot, so I had to get you up early.
Well, Joe is always very accommodating when I need an interview, so happy to help him out.
Well, listen, I appreciate it, brother, and what a day it's going to be. First of all, what's the weather like? What are the track conditions from what you can gather?
We'll certainly be fast. All the precipitation ended late Wednesday, early Thursday. Turf, probably better a Marcus Hurst question. He loves that stuff, but hard to imagine we're firm since we had to be off the turf on Friday, but don't expect any super soft or yielding conditions after two dry days. And it's been windy. Probably would have liked a little more sun to dry it out, but I would say no excuses track condition-wise after the overnight we had.
How great is it, Ed, just to be able to get back into the swing of getting out to the racetracks again and starting to see the horses in person as opposed to having to sit on your couch and watch them on TV?
Yeah, I've been doing the Turfway handicapping via Zoom, and we've all been fortunate that racing didn't stop during this, but as we all know, no matter what side of racing you're on, gambling, the horse side, both, there's nothing like being at the track and just experiencing that fellowship with fellow horse players and horse people. So it's been a great week in that regard, and just seeing people out and seeing the horses on the track, and then to end it with a 14 race card and these fantastic stakes, it's certainly a blessing to be down here and a lot of fun.
Let's start by talking about the four graded stakes, and then if there's another horse you really like on the rest of the card, we'll go ahead and throw it in as time allows. The first of the four graded stakes, and they will be run in succession, races 11 through 14. The first one, race 11, is the New Orleans Classic, grade 2, purse of $400,000. It's a mile and an eighth for the older horses on the main track. And we get the return of Roadster in here, who, by the way, was my Kentucky Derby pick, but that didn't work out too good for me back in 2019.
No, hey, you took a shot with the Santa Anita Derby winner, and it is exciting to have him back. I have to say, the layoff and the mile and eighth, and I know he's had some stout works into this, but it's a big ask. We'll see what kind of money he takes, but I'm expecting to try to fade him at 3-1. And I think Owendale, and unfortunately, is certainly the big favorite here, but I do see him is the horse to beat. Thankfully, I have a couple prices in the next two races that don't make me feel as bad, leaning on a chalk in race 11. But Florent Giroux was down here on Friday, and I thought was riding out of his skin. And I don't expect that to stall any here with these Cox Cadillacs he's riding. And Owendale's one of them. I think he's going to get an aggressive ride and going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, let's talk about that for just a minute, Ed. Brad Cox is, he started this a couple of years ago. Before he's become the household name that he is today and an Eclipse Award-winning champion trainer, he was doing good work for a very, very long time. And now things have just continued to grow and to click for him. And you mentioned Florent Giroux, who has been riding a lot of his big horses. This is a team right now that is as formidable as any that we have seen. It kind of like Todd Pletcher, John Velasquez, right? It reminds me of that type of combination right now.
No, I think, he found a rider in Flo that fits his style of training. He's not a, straight to the lead like, sometimes we think of a Paco style. But Flo definitely is good with rationing that energy. And whether you're on a Knicks go on the front end or a horse like Owendale who can stalk and pounce, just having something left is huge. And Flo seems to click with the Cox runners in that regard and any trainer really, but it's understandable when you look at kind of how Brad operates. And then you get the dual threat. Brad's the type of trainer more like, say Bobby Frankel than Bob Baffert, and that he will do dual surface, and he's comfortable sending them on both in graded stakes, and Flo certainly fits that as well. So very understandable partnership, and they're loaded for bear today.
Well, I know you like the favorite Owendale in that race, the New Orleans Classic, but if there was somebody that was going to pull off an upset, who else might you have your eye on?
I'd take a look at Ollie, my boy. I thought that last race, sort of a coming out party, and we talked to Norm Cassie on Friday in the paddock about him, and the mile and an eighth, getting to stretch out from that nice win at 8.5 furlongs. This horse is by a Belmont Stakes winner out of a mare who's by a Belmont Stakes winner. So have to think the distance is getting longer is going to help Ollie, my boy. And if he takes another step forward, he's dangerous in here.
Talking with Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and from BristNet. You can catch him, by the way, every single Thursday here on the Horse Racing Radio Network with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on the BristNet.com call-in show. Your chance to call in and talk racing with Ed and with Anthony, and they do a fantastic job on that show. And, of course, Ed, part of several other podcasts through Twin Spires. So plenty of ways to catch Ed DeRosa, not just here on Saturday mornings with me. All right, Ed, the 12th race is the
Munis Memorial. You may have also seen my tweet.
You've been known to send a tweet or two.
Yeah.
What was the one you sent to me yesterday when you asked me if I needed your picture for the graphic we posted about the show?
Well, I just saw you use those three other guys, so I wanted to make sure you had mine as an option.
Yeah, I think we had Stidham and Talamo, and there
was
one
other
one? Guest that was coming. Maybe Cox? Deshaun Parker,
I guess.
Oh, no,
it would be someone who's on the show.
Yeah, probably Deshaun Parker, I guess, were the three Wolf, guests.
Wolf nominee, right?
Yeah.
George Wolf nominee.
Yeah, and you sent me the tweet that said, "Do you need my picture?" And I quickly responded and said, "Wait a minute, I think with you and I, we kind of fall into that face for radio category."
That's right.
yeah, no doubt. By the way, Lee just sent me a message and said, I originally put Ed's picture in there, but I guess you got bumped again.
Man,
it's not good to be
punches.
The Duke. It's not good to be the Duke of Degeneracy right now. All right, talk to me about the Muniz Memorial, brother, that raced 12 older horses on the turf, mile and an eighth.
Yeah, we're going to try to beat Colonel Liam. Like I said, I'm on Owendale, who's the favorite, and I like the obvious horses in the Louisiana Derby. So in the middle legs, I'm looking to hopefully separate a little bit. And he's not up for Brad Cox, but familiar refrain. Florent Giroux on Spooky Channel, I thought the horse ran great in the Connolly at Sam Houston. And just one of those, similar to Ollie, my boy, just seems to maybe going in the right direction at the right time. I do fear Colonel Liam, but I don't think he's that much faster. And I've been comforted over the last couple of days, even knowing I might be against him anyway. I listened to Patrick McGooey, did a podcast, talked with Michael Baychalk yesterday, two very good local handicappers, and they both sort of said the same thing about his Pegasus. Perfect trip and got the right setup, and maybe he's good enough that Irad will give him the same treatment today. But is the shortest price in this field, he's one I want to beat.
Are you trying to hook these horses up in that all stakes pick four, which is 11 through 14, or are you playing the races individually?
No, I'm definitely looking to play that all stakes pick four. And in part, I have a single in race 13 that I think is a bit against the grain. So hopefully I can, make something happen with that. But being on Owendale, and we'll get to the Louisiana Derby, sort of tip of my hand, but I'm on the obvious two. So I feel like this is the type of race I need to beat the favorite if I'm going to have any shot at a payout.
All right, well, let's talk about that race 13, the Twin Spires Fairgrounds Oaks, and the unconventional single that you might have in there. Three-year-old fillies going a mile and a 16th on the main track.
I'm taking Lil Tootsie. I think Clarier and Travel Column certainly merit the respect, and I understand why they're the two favorites, but as a Ragazin guy, it's impossible to ignore. Neither is remotely the fastest horse in this race. And I'm not big on betting short prices to have to improve to win. and that's the case based on the sheets. So we're tossing Travel Column and Clairiere, and I think Lil Tootsie is the one to lean on. Her last two races have both been really strong, including stretching out to get the win. Luis Saez aboard for Amos, to me, signals in a race with not a ton of pace. I think they're going to be aggressive, and she's shown an ability to be close to the pace in a sprint. So why not here going a mile in the 16th? And these connections lost with a huge favorite 2 years ago in Serengeti Empress. Of course, she went on to win the Oaks, so that helped ease the pain. But nevertheless, I'm sure they'd love to storm in here and win with Lil Tootsie after what happened 2 years ago, and I think they're going to do it.
Should be a square price, 4-1 on the morning line. And as you mentioned, the other fillies in there, Travel Column certainly going to take a lot of play, and Clairiere going to take a lot of play too. So maybe even get a little higher than 4-1?
I was pretty surprised to see the morning line, but I'll also say I don't think I've talked to anyone around Fairgrounds who hasn't mentioned this horse. So I feel like I'm on the Hofburg of the Fairgrounds Oaks. But nevertheless, I think with Travel Column and Clairiere in there, she can't be any less than 4-1. So we'll take our chances there. But my first thought when the race was drawn is, I mean, I thought she'd be 6 or 8-1.
All right, ding, ding, ding. Let's move on to the main event, the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby, mile and 3/16. The final race on that 14-race program has a post time of 6:44 Eastern, 5:44 local time in New Orleans. That's Central Time. And should be a good one, man. I think that this is a really, really well-matched field.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is kind of what's great about the Derby Trail is these horses have to run against each other to get into the Derby. You can't cherry pick spots, and you have the LeCompte and Risen Star trifecta back for a rubber match, and then you have some interesting shippers and up and comers. I did go with one of the shippers on top and Hot Rod Charlie. And full disclosure, you know, these races are drawn early. We make our picks. After talking to Brad Cox yesterday, the poker player and me couldn't help but think that he wasn't bluffing when he was representing a made hand. I try not to fall for trainer speak. And, you know, Mike, we talk to a lot of guys and gals on the backstretch, and they say some things, make us roll our eyes sometimes. But I just felt like Brad was really, really confident in a, you know, not in a braggadocious way, but he knows what he's leading over today. And that makes me a little nervous for having picked Hot Rod Charlie. So it's just going to be one of those two for me. And like I said, hopefully a price in the turf race and singling Lil Tootsie still makes it worth it, even kicking this thing off with Owendale. But I'd be shocked if one of those two didn't win this race.
I also thought Brad Cox was extremely confident in some of his comments regarding Mandaloon. I think he feels pretty good about this horse coming into this race. And, Ed, one thing I referenced at the open to the show is when I oftentimes talk about the Brisnet past performances, which are the only PPs that I use, and you see a horse that has a late pace number that's very strong, meaning that they're finishing strong, that the late pace in the race, at least in regards to their other rivals, is very strong. Mandaloon last time out was average with his late pace number. He still drew off to win by a length and a quarter. But I caution people that you got to take that with a little grain of salt, because his early pace number and his mid pace number, the E1 and E2, as they call them in the Bris past performances, were the best of his career. So it's understandable that maybe that late pace number wouldn't be quite as strong. Am I describing that correctly when I talk about those pace numbers?
Yep, and that's a great point about the early pace being the best of his career, because Kerry Photius, who did Equiform, and, you know, is just a big believer in pace handicapping, has said that often is a much better indicator of success the next time out, when you see that they ran fast early and faster early than they had in their career. And he did his own pace numbers, but they apply using Brisnets as well. It's a similar scale. So this does seem like this is the effort, you know, that they're expecting for the Judmont colt. And Hot Rod Charlie, I liked him a little bit in the Breeders' Cup based on the fact he had run a triple-digit late pace rating in his Breeders' Cup prep. And I have a lot of respect for his talent, so I can't shy away. I picked him before I talked to Brad, and we'll live and die with that. But Mandaloon, even as the favorite, got added to my ticket after my conversation.
Yeah, I can see why. About 30 seconds or so left before I have to get to the Lexus Legends of the Turf. Ed, anybody else on the card that stands out to you that you think people need to go to the windows?
Yeah, and you can ask Joe about this horse, but he's riding a firster for Steve Asmussen in the fifth, Bedouin Fighter, who by Warfront, out of a mineshaft mare, who that doesn't necessarily scream six furlongs, but I think we're going to get a square price on this debut runner that has some pedigree power, and we know Steve can get him ready. So I'll have to tune in and see if you get anything out of Joe of that one. But the third and the fifth, I think, is going to be worth a shot.
I'll make sure I bring it up to him. He's Ed DeRosa, twinspires.com, brisnet.com. Of course, you can catch him every Thursday night right here on the brisnet.com call-in show on HRRN. The Duke of Degeneracy. Duke, good luck at the windows today, my friend.
Thank you. It should be a great day, Mike.
All right. Appreciate it. Ed DeRosa here on HRRN. All right, coming up next, I'm going to turn our attention to Sam Houston. I'll talk with Sam Houston announcer Chris Griffin about their huge Texas Champions Day, which takes place later tonight. Again, Joe Talamo at 9 o'clock, Mike Stidham coming up at 9:25. So a lot of things to get to in the immediate future. Stay with me. It is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
On November 3rd, 1923, the largest crowd ever to pass through the gates at Latonia was on hand for the running of the championship stakes. Sportsmen from Maine to California, from Minnesota to Florida were there and filled with enormous excitement, enthusiasm, and expectation. What they came to see was a most memorable horse race indeed. Harry F. Sinclair's Great Zeb, coming off a resounding win over Papyrus in a match race at Belmont Park a few weeks earlier, was to be challenged by Carl Weideman's In Memoriam and the superb My Own. The value of the race was a hefty $50,000, and there were four entries. The track was in excellent shape in spite of a day-long drizzle. Earl Sandy was to be aboard Zeb as usual. Matt Garner had a leg up on In Memoriam, and Earl Poole had the mount on My Own. The crowd, so huge that the infield had to handle the overflow, included James M. Cox, the former governor of Ohio, who was a presidential candidate at the time on the Democratic ticket. Cox was to present the winning owner a gold cup. There was a lot to be proven in this race. Zeb had beaten In Memoriam in the Kentucky Derby, but many observers felt In Memoriam was at less than top form in that outing. It was 3:38 in the afternoon on that November 3rd of 1923 when the four-horse field reached the starting gate at the head of the stretch. Starter William Hamilton had his hands full in spite of the small field, and it took 3 minutes to establish some form of order. But when they aligned to his satisfaction, he got them away to a perfect start. In Memoriam had been particularly raucous at the post, but once settled down, was away in front. Zeb was second, then Rialto and My Own. Going by the stands for the first time, first it was In Memoriam and then Zeb exchanging leads. Zeb then assumed command with My Own moving up to second, In Memoriam third, and then Rialto. Zeb was being settled into stride and well rated into and on around the turn and continued to set the pace down the long backside. It did not appear, however, that Zeb was running with his customary long, smooth stride. At the far turn, Earl Sandy appeared to be having trouble rating Zeb, and it now looked to be which challenger would be the first to corral the leader, In Memoriam or My Own. As they hit the top of the stretch in the run for the wire, Matt Garner asked In Memoriam for extra speed, and he got it as he pulled even with Zeb. Sandy dug in on Zeb and asked his big brown colt who was wearing blinkers for reserve speed and energy. My Own, under Poole, was not far back, but was flattening out. In Memoriam got by Zeb at the eighth pole, even though Sandy was whipping and driving for all he was worth on the gallant Zeb, who was soundly beaten the last 16th. In Memoriam had gained sweet revenge for the Derby defeat and coasted home a winner, and after In Memoriam had won, owner Carl Weideman said he had known all along his horse could whip the other three, all of whom had been shipped in from the East. Quote, "There never was any doubt in my mind that In Memoriam could trim Zeb or My Own. My colt's win today bears that theory out. None of the Easterners had any excuse to offer, and I acknowledge their sportsmanship as none of them tried to alibi," unquote. A great moment. The Latonia Championship Stakes, November 3rd, 1923, when In Memoriam with Zeb and My Own in Thoroughbred Racing.
Visionary Design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at two, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At three, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring.
$450,000.
Internet buys $510,000, thank you.
An exciting young stallion, Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park will reopen on a limited basis to the general public beginning Friday, April 2nd, with the Grade 1 $750,000 Run Happy Santa Anita Derby highlighting a blockbuster card on Saturday, April 3rd. Please visit santaanita.com for details. And don't forget, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. In addition to reopening to the public on April 2nd, first post time has now been moved to 1 p.m. This Saturday, March 20th, our main event is the Grade 3 San Luis Rey for older horses at a mile and one half on turf. Again, first post time Saturday and Sunday is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest at 11:50 a.m. as they analyze each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, big doings in the state of Texas tonight. Everything's bigger in Texas, right? Isn't that what they say? The Lone Star State, Sam Houston, playing host to Texas Champions Day. And this is a Texas Champions Day that I would imagine, and I'll ask Chris Griffin, the announcer at Sam Houston, this question when he joins me in just a few minutes. I would imagine this one has to hold a little extra special meaning because of what that city went through with the ice storm and the snow and losing power, losing water. They went through a living hell in many parts of Texas and very much in Houston, Texas. So I'm going to ask Chris about that. He was one of the folks that was without power and without water during that storm. So I can imagine this Texas Champions Night is going to hold a little extra special meaning for them. All right, well, Chris comes up momentarily, but first it's time to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet, brought to you, of course, by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race 9 at Santa Anita, a maiden special weight with a post time of 8:25 Eastern, 5:25 Central. Number 5, No Foolery Here, 4-1 on the morning line, has a 25% win projection from First Bet. That's a large number in a 12-horse field, rates 13 points higher than any other contender, and ranks first in 10 of First Bet's handicapping factors for this race. That's the most of any runner. The Flavian Pratt, Richard Baltus jockey trainer combo is 5 for its last 8 coming into this race week, according to BetMix stats. And No Foolery Here was 4th in his debut, behind a 6-5 winner who returned to beat allowance horses on March 13th. And he now stretches out with pedigree for the trip. Number 5, No Foolery Here in race 9 at Santa Anita is today's First Bet. And I'll be back right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gaming Support Line 800-522-4700.
Be plenty of bet. Yeah, I can actually say that there will be plenty of bets made on tonight's card at Sam Houston. Seven Texas Champions Stakes are set to be contested later this evening, and to tell us all about it is track announcer Chris Griffin. Chris, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good morning. Good to be here. Thanks for
happy to have you on board.
Good to be on.
Looking forward to the visit here this morning. Chris, I referenced just a short time ago that tonight's card, Texas Champions Night, has to be a little extra special for you and for the team and for everybody in Houston, Texas, who went through a living hell with the ice storm and the loss of power and the loss of water. You were one of the people that was affected. What does this night mean to Texas and to Texas racing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big night. It's the night we've been pointing to and looking forward to. And Houston Racing Festival, Texas Preview Day, all big nights. But, yeah, this is a night really to celebrate the Texas Breds and everything that's just gone on the past couple of years now with everything that you've seen here that happened in Houston and Texas as a whole, to be able to get this purse money and really get this product to where they feel like it needs to be and offer some really nice wagering opportunities. And this is our kind of our redemption too, as far as last season. You know, we had a tough time last season with Texas Champions Day. So, looking forward to it. Looks like good weather, and we're ready to rock and roll. Yeah, we got seven stakes races, $100,000 each, and it's going to be a great night to celebrate the Texas Breds.
We'll talk more about those stakes races in a minute, but you touch on something there that I want you to elaborate on, Chris. Talk about the resiliency of the community in Houston, Texas, and the horse racing community as a whole in the state of Texas.
Yeah, so when we had the weather there, we lost that week of racing, you really saw how hard horse men and women work during difficult times. And it's something that you're not prepared for. You talk about cold weather like that. You know, Houston just wasn't the region. Just it's not really infrastructure-wise really fully prepared for something like that. Many parts of the country see that type of cold weather and go through those types of things. But yeah, when you lose power for 36, 48 hours, and when you're losing water, you have to find ways to take care of the horse first and foremost. And that's really what you saw during that time. We were all working together as hard as we could. Track management was pitching in everywhere they could. And being on site and being present. And, you know, it's you always hear Houston strong and some of those terms. And I don't know if we were at quite that level, but you could really see horsemen and women take care of the horses, make sure that they were getting the water when they could, and doing everything they could to make sure we weathered that storm. And then just to be able to endure, you know, some of the tougher years as far as what Houston has dealt with and Sam Houston Race Park, and now getting to a level where the horsemen are being rewarded. You're seeing purse increases. You're seeing that handle is up, and people are getting involved and enjoying the signal a lot. And so it just speaks to the entire team, both the folks that are on the track, both the people that work behind the scenes, and the people that help promote us now, that things are going really, really well. And this is the night to celebrate that. And we're looking forward to it and looking forward to some great racing and celebrating Texas, like you said.
Yeah, and tonight's card is going to offer several really good wagering opportunities for folks that are going to be watching around the country on simulcast, or if they're going to be at the races later on, there are going to be plenty of opportunities to make some money. So let's talk about those seven Texas Champions Stakes that are taking place. The first is race number 4, the Spirit of Texas Stakes. And what I'll do, Chris, I'll go ahead and lead into the race, and you go ahead and tell me the main storylines and the main players as you see it. The Spirit of Texas, how do you see that one?
So Gunnar Celestic Man, I think, has been one of the most underrated horses you've seen all meet. From a wagering standpoint, he just doesn't take a lot of money at the windows. He's 9-2 on the morning line. I think he's going to get the lead in here. Gold Pilot is cross-entered in this race and the Star of Texas, so that is the number 6. We'll see where he ends up running. But he's a type that does come from off the pace. He puts the blinkers on. And Good Judgment has had 2 wins against open company, so he'll be closing into it. Could be sitting just off the pace. But I think Gunnar Celestic Man will be in front of the top of the stretch, and we'll see if he can hang on. He's going to be 9-2. He's going to offer more value. Direct Dial finished ahead of that horse in the last start at 7 furlongs, now cutting back in distance. Why not take a shot here to kick things off there in race number 4? With the stakes racing action with the 5 Gunnar Celestic Man. I like the price at 9-2. We'll see if you can hold off Good Judgment, who's going to be your favorite, 2-1 on the morning line, and we'll see if you can start with a price.
Well, the Spirit of Texas Stakes will be followed by the Star of Texas Stakes, another $100,000 stake. And by the way, all of the Texas Champions Night stakes are $100,000, which is outstanding. 1 mile on the dirt track. How do you see the Star of Texas?
Yeah, just mentioned Direct Dial, and again, we'll see where Gold Pilot ends up going. But this looks like a field of 6. It'll be a field of 5 if Gold Pilot decides to go in the Spirit of Texas. Direct Dial hasn't been 2 turns in a while. I guess that might be the only knock, but he's 4-5 on the morning line. He's a deserving favorite in this spot. Stuart Elliott, Steve Asmussen team up in here. And when Direct Dial runs with Texas spreads, he just performs. He does very well. He runs well under the lights. And I think he'll shine again here. He's 3-6 at Sam Houston. So, again, when you're trying to play against a favorite, this is a tough one to play against. Can I Bob might be the only one that seemingly has a nice shot against this horse because he's pretty experienced going around 2 turns. He's 3-5 at the distance and does like it here at Sam Houston Race Park. So maybe Can I Bob can run down Direct Dial. But it looks like they'll be the 2 main contenders in there in the Star of Texas, but that's a real nice Texas spread in the 2 that trainer Steve Asmussen's got in Direct Dial.
In race number 6, we will pay homage to the 1987 champion sprinter Groovy, a Texas bred himself. This race, 6 furlongs on the main track, so it's appropriate that we would be talking about Groovy. Any future Groovies in this race, Chris?
Ooh, I don't know. They're gonna have to pick it up a little bit. They're gonna have to run quite a bit faster in order to get to that level. But Bobby Brinkley looks nice to the outside. Frank Lucarelli, they claimed this horse for $62,000 back in January. That kind of sent shockwaves and let them know that Frank Lucarelli's here to stay in Houston. And with Chad and Josh and how they claim there, 2nd beaten 4 lengths behind Drive Happy last time, so against open company, gets back to sprinting, and I think that's what he wants to do. You know, he performed well in there. The number came back strong. They tried the Texas Turf Mile. Didn't quite work out on the grass. Silence Doro is going to show some speed. They do take the blinkers off, so we'll see how much speed this horse is going to show up front. The horses that ran well on preview day, when you talk about the 2 Stone Cafe and the 3 Dustem, both for trainer Brett Calhoun coming out of that event, I think Dustem actually has a slight edge. Had a little tougher trip and ran really, really well in the Jim's Orbit. So if I'd be looking for some of those exotics, maybe looking at the 3 over the 2. But Bobby Brinkley, I like the post to the outside, and I think he's back to sprinting, which is what he likes to do.
Previewing tonight's Sam Houston card with track announcer Chris Griffin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chris, race 7 is the Richard King Turf Stakes, 1 1/8 on the grass. How do you see that one?
Yeah, really nice race. You know, you talk about 1 1/8, the John B. Connelly Turf Course. There's turf rail is going to be at 0 feet. Looking like a firm turf course tonight. And the number 5, Sunlit Song, is as consistent as they come. He's won at this distance before. He lost last time out there at the 1 16th, but he hasn't won at 1 16th. So you can see Mujab Jr. had some issues coming into that that effort on January 30th, as we saw in an interview after the race in that Houston turf on preview night. And the horse, you know, he came from far, far back. He saved ground the entire way. And then he just caught Sunlit Song at the wire. I think you could see something similar to that situation. I guess the number 4, Singapore Flash, holds some intrigue. Horse had been running against open company, comes over from fairgrounds, and runs here on March 4th. it was an impressive win. You know, drew away, won by a length and a half, and is going to offer a little bit more value as Henley's Joy finished behind that runner. So kind of an interesting one to have in there that gets back with Texas Bred. Redditori, he's the now defending 2020 Horse of the Year here in the state of Texas. We'll see. He's got to pick it up a little bit. His last few efforts have just left a little bit to be desired, not quite the same horse that we saw in 2020 or even in 2019. But Redditori, good hard-knocking veteran six-year-old. Those look like the four main rivals. Aries Celestic Man holds the key. He's got speed. They should go quick up front, and we'll see who's going to close best. But I like the number five, Sunlit Song. He's consistent, and he likes the distance.
A really good race. That's the Richard King Turf Stakes, race number seven. Race number eight is the, okay, Barra Lass or Barra Lass?
Barra Lass. We're Barra Lass in there. six furlongs, and you talk about this race, and there's going to be enough speed towards the inside. You know, Texas Red Bell's got one gear, and I think she's going to go to the front. Happy Sailor is going to be a deserving favorite, but I'm going to take a shot. Let's find a price in here. Let's go with That's a Lot of Bling. Third behind Star of the North. There's no Star of the North in here tonight. This one actually didn't break that well. Closed well into some, you know, decent fractions in there. They weren't going to catch Star of the North, but I think that they can catch rivals here tonight. So I'll go with 10-1. I like all that 10-1 there with Austin Gustafson, Leander Gonsalves, who's approaching 2,000 wins. We'll see what happens here on a Saturday as we progress, as that's a nice career milestone. But Wing Texas is one that can get in the mix. I guess it just depends on how you compare the two Altozano versus that allowance event that was run on March 4th. So Happy Sailor is a deserving favorite, one to maybe include on your tickets, but I'll be looking at That's a Lot of Bling.
All right, interesting stuff in the Barra Lass Stakes. The last two, race number 9, race number 10, at least those are the last two stakes. There are 11 races on the program tonight. The San Jacinto Turf Stakes and the Yellow Rose Stakes. Tell me about those two.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where I'm a Discreet Lady is going to run, right? And trainer Carl Broberg said we should probably have a decision morning sometime, early morning. So we'll see where she ends up going. She looks very tough in both spots, as the morning line tells you she's 8-5 in both races. So it'll be interesting to see where she ends up going. From a pace scenario standpoint, the number 3, Discreet Smile, the number 8, Miss Perfective, got some speed. But I'm a Discreet Lady. If she goes here in the San Jacinto, I think that she's going to get the job done. She was so impressive last time out. She broke from the rail, set the fractions, and then she was long gone. I think you could see a familiar trip, and she doesn't necessarily need the lead either. It looks like she can stalk just off of it, and she'll be tough in that position if she chooses to go into San Jacinto. Now, if she doesn't, I think it really opens that race up. So I'd be looking for a little bit more value. Maybe you look at a horse like a Cor Luna to improve, or Impressive Reward, something from off the pace. Speed has done pretty well during this meet at SHRP, so just keep an eye on that. But I like the 4 if she does go in the San Jacinto. And then you take a look at the Yellow Rose, like you spoke of, 6 furlongs. Bernie is probably the most interesting horse on the card for me. Bernie comes from Gulfstream Park, had been running quite well over there. Now gets in with Texas Breds, comes over here to San Houston Race Park. Has been working at the over the surface. So I like that a lot. Not crazy about the rail draw. If you wanted to look for some value in there, I think she's our fastest, offers that. You know, you've been looking at her last few efforts, a lot of it around 2 turns. Now she gets back to sprinting, though, and she is 4-7 when she is sprinting. So maybe she's got enough pace to set things up. Bernie's going to go fast, and if I'm Discreet Lady goes in here, she's going to go quick, too. So Star to Bling is another one that could respond on the dirt. So, yeah, plenty of opportunities there to close things out in the Yellow Rose. And that's going to be part of the pick 6. And so Mike wanted to pass one thing along, that the Space City pick 6, which will start in race number 6, actually has a carryover going into tonight, over $11,000, and that's a non-jackpot situation. So even more intrigue to a wonderful card here on Texas Champions Day or night, whatever you prefer. And we're looking forward to it. Like I say, 7 stakes races, $100,000 each.
Yeah, first post 5:45 Central for the first race of the evening. That's 6:45 here on the West Coast, or on the East Coast, wherever the heck I am this morning, on the East Coast. And the forecast looks good for tonight, too?
Yep. Cross our fingers. This is Houston. Anything funny can happen here and there, but we're looking forward to it. Looks like it's going to be really nice weather tonight. Looks like fast and firm, and we're looking forward to it. Let's get after it tonight. Make some money and enjoy everyone's afternoon, and then join us this evening for Texas Champions Day. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, no snow, no ice. The action should be hot later tonight in Houston, Texas. Chris, listen, appreciate the visit, man, and all the best. We'll look forward to hearing you later tonight.
Thanks, Mike. Good luck.
All right, Chris Griffin. Sam Houston, announcer here on HRRN. Going to get to another break. I'll come back, get you set for the second hour of the program. It is a loaded second half of the show. Stay with me on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
And they're into the stretch with Spunderun, the wonder catch, coming to the gate pole. Spunderun drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third. But Spunderun has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spunderun, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spunderun. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a 0 on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple greatest stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Drain the clock, and Edgar Zayas to the top of the stretch, a length and a half in front. Papa 2 is charging hard for Junior Alvarado. He just went up into second from Tarantino back third. Then Prime Factor and Greatest Honor as they turn for home. Up front, Drain the Clock trying to carry his speed. From the outside, Papa 2, now Greatest Honor hitting high gear. And here he comes now. Greatest Honor finding his best stride right when he needs to. And he's going to run down Drain the Clock to win the Fountain of Youth. Greatest Honor for the money. Drain the Clock with a good try second. Papa 2 put up a huge effort for third. Then Tarantino and Girafales. And 144 flat.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Greatest Honor winning the Fountain of Youth Stakes. He'll be in action next Saturday. We'll be talking about him and the Fountain of Youth. He'll get a showdown with the Bob Baffert trained Spielberg, who it was announced yesterday is going to head to the Florida Derby. So should be a good one there. And Greatest Honor, trained by Hall of Famer Shug McGahee. You remember he won his only Kentucky Derby with Orb. Going to be joined by his longtime exercise writer, Lena Loriel, coming up at 9:40 Eastern Time in this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. You know, so many people in our sport work tirelessly behind the scenes to make our sport a success. And Lena, who was born in Sweden, came to the U.S. in 1984, got her first job that year with Shug McGahey, and here she is all these years later still working as Shug's exercise writer. And he said that she is an integral part of his success in his Hall of Fame career. Can't wait to visit with Lena coming up at 9:40. That will wrap up hour two of the program, which kicks off in just a couple of moments with jockey Joe Talamo, who is going to be a busy man today at the fairgrounds. I'll talk to the Louisiana native coming up shortly. Mike Stidham going to be with me at 9:24. Again, 9:40, Unsung Heroes. And hour three. Remember, here until 11 a.m. Eastern, it begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy. Sean sits down one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey, with Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez at 10 o'clock. That is one interview you won't want to miss. You won't want to miss Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History at 10:25, and you definitely won't want to miss my interview with Deshaun Parker coming up at 10:40, who was recently honored with the George Wolfe Memorial Award, which is highly prestigious. If you're a jockey, to win that award holds an awful lot of meaning. And Deshaun Parker, one of the classiest guys you're going to meet, is going to be with me coming up at 10:40. So stay tuned for that. A lot of things coming up here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Hour two comes up with Joe Talamo next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. SoCal racing fans rejoice. Santa Anita Park will reopen to the public just in time for the 84th running of the Grade 1 run Happy Santa Anita Derby, as fans, in a limited capacity, can return to the great race place beginning Friday, April 2nd, a day prior to the final prep in the region for the 147th running of the Kentucky Derby on May 1st at Churchill Downs. Tickets must be purchased in advance, as walk-up or general admission tickets cannot be sold, though that could change as the COVID-19 numbers improve. Box seats, tables, and individual seats will be spaced out and sold to maximize social distancing, and all fans must wear a mask. Santa Anita Park joins Oaklawn Park, Tampa Bay Downs, and a number of other racetracks that are allowing fans to attend the races. Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida, recently announced that fans would be in attendance for the Florida Derby next Saturday, March 27th. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for hour two of the Equine Forum.
Happy spring, everyone. The first day of spring kicks off with Louisiana Derby Day at the fairgrounds. Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron in the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, and that Louisiana Derby is stacked. I told you that hasn't historically been the place to prep if you want to win the Kentucky Derby. Only four horses have run in the Louisiana Derby before winning the Kentucky Derby, and only two have pulled off the Louisiana Derby, Kentucky Derby double. You have to go all the way back to Grindstone in 1996 for Dwayne Lucas to find the last horse to do it. Before that, 1924 in Black Gold. But you did have Country House in 2013, who was fourth in the Louisiana Derby. You had Funny Side in 2003, who was runner-up in that Louisiana Derby. Both of those went on to Where the Rose Is. And we'll see if this year's Derby winner is running later today. We'll find out Saturday, May 1st. Of course, we will be there as your exclusive radio home in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. HRN proud to present the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown again this year. We'll be there all week long to get you set for the big day. And poll question today at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Who's your pick to win today's Twin Spires Louisiana Derby at the fairgrounds? Mandaloon, Proxy, Hot Rod Charlie, or other? And if you choose the other category, please comment as to who you think it is going to be. So far, Mandaloon leads the way. The 8-5 morning line favorite leads the way with 41%. You can continue to keep the votes coming in all the way through the show this morning at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, jockey Joe Talamo certainly hopes it's not Mandaloon, and he hopes it's not Proxy, and he hopes it's not Hot Rod Charlie, who wins the Louisiana Derby later today. He is with me now on a busy morning for him. Really appreciate the visit. Joe, appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
let me ask you the poll question. Who do you think wins the Louisiana Derby today?
Midnight Bourbon, baby.
That's a really he's a really good horse, man. What do you have to do to turn the tables on Mandaloon and everybody else?
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you know, the top three finishers from the Risen Star last time were in there, myself, excuse me, Mandaloon and Proxen. I know they're doing really well. And obviously Hot Rod Charlie's in from California. So, I mean, those are definitely some really nice horses. But I think more than anything, I know the distance is really going to help Midnight Bourbon. He's such a big athletic horse, and I just think I really believe the further the better is going to be right up his alley.
Yeah, you know, he's a horse that just continues to show up and run his race every time, which those kind of horses are nice to be aboard. Joe, if you were to work out the ideal trip in your mind, what going into today's race, what's the ideal trip to be successful?
I really think we're going to be just right off of sitting right off of Right and Just. I'm sure it's on paper. It looks like it's going to be kind of the same setup as the Risen Star. I mean, obviously he's a pretty quick horse drawing the two hole there, so I'm sure he'll break on top. If not, obviously we'll kind of go to Plan B and try and go to the lead or not. But he's the good thing about Midnight Bourbon. You can kind of place him wherever you want. He's for a big horse, he breaks really, really sharp, which is great because he puts you in a real good position early on. And again, he's rateable. I mean, I know he's won on the lead. He won the LeCompte in front, but he's definitely not a horse that absolutely has to be in front. He's definitely rateable, and that's really nice to be on a horse like that, just to be able to put you in a good position, whether it's first, second, or third, and then just kind of let the race develop from there.
The LeCompte Victory was the first time you were aboard Midnight Bourbon. You've been aboard him at each of his last two starts, both of those in his three-year-old season. Joe, what have you learned about this horse in those two outings that you think might help you today and even moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think more than anything is the distance. He just it sounds funny. I mean, even in defeat last time, if you really notice his replay after the wire, he was actually trying to come back again on Proxy and Mandaloon. So I really think that extra 16th, just look at the Derby. I mean, that quarter mile, that extra eighth of a mile from the mile and an eighth preps to, that mile and a quarter really separates a lot. And, at this stage and their three-year-old careers, I mean, even a 16th, it doesn't seem like much, but that definitely separates quite a few horses this time of year. So I'm definitely hoping for that and definitely think that. I know he's been training forward after his last race as well. So, again, if we have a good trip, I think we're going to see something good today.
What have you seen from the competition? I know you mentioned Mandaloon and Proxy, who you finished behind last time out, but what have you seen from them as you've been in the races with them and kind of knocked heads with them? What have they shown you?
Again, those are two very impressive horses as well. I mean, in the LeCompte, we beat them, and then last time in the Risen Stars, they kind of turned the table. So I know they're moving forward too. But again, at this this time in April, horses can go up and horses can go down right before the Derby. You know what I mean? So again, I think it's all going to be who's training good, who's doing good. And I know Midnight Bourbon's doing unbelievable right now, so that's pretty much all we can ask for. And again, hopefully, if we all have a good trip going into the first turn, nice and relaxed, I think he's going to show something good today.
All right, let's turn our attention to the race before the Louisiana Derby. And by the way, I know you would love to win the Louisiana Derby, being a Louisiana native. That's one race, Joe, that has eluded you. With all the big stakes races you've won, that's the one that I know holds a special place in your heart. So let me ask you that question first before we talk about the Fairgrounds Oaks. Tell me, I mean, to win the Louisiana Derby, where does that rank for you?
Oh, it would be huge. I mean, just growing up at the Fairgrounds as a kid, I mean, I've been going there since I was 6-7 years old with my dad. Till I was 17 when I left for California, I don't think I've missed a Louisiana Derby since I was like 6-7 years old. You know, that was definitely, that was like Derby day for me. I remember my dad would bring me out, not only all the races before that year. But, I mean, that day was, you know, a very special day. I can remember all, when Funny Side won. Who else? I'm drawing a blank, but I pretty much every Louisiana Derby I can remember. And, you know, that was always a, a race on my bucket list. I definitely wanted to be a part of. So that would definitely be huge.
Every time you join me on the show and every time we talk about the Louisiana Derby, Joe, I can't help to think back to 14 years ago in 2007 when we were at the fairgrounds to broadcast the Louisiana Derby for the very first time on the network. I was just starting Horse Racing Radio Network, and it was our first trip ever to the fairgrounds to broadcast a race, and you were leading apprentice rider that year, and I remember doing an interview with you on this very same show, sitting by the paddock, and you came out, and I was just blown away at the professionalism and the poise that you really exuded at that point in 2007. And then to see where you are today, winning, what, more than 2,000 races in your career, it's pretty cool to see it, man.
You sure? I thought that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, was it 4 years ago?
No, it had, gosh, that's crazy. That's 14 years ago. Yeah, time, time's flown by, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, you think back on these 2,142 wins that you have coming into today. Tell me about a couple of the moments that really are always going to stand out to you, moments in your career that you say, okay, this is a milestone for me.
I mean, off the top of my head, the Wood Memorial with I Want Revenge, the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita with California Flag, Sydney's Candy, who won the Santa Anita Derby, Melatonin in the Santa Anita Handicap. That definitely, I've been fortunate to have plenty others, but definitely those stick right out. Neshoba's Key, who I won my first grade one on at Santa Anita, she was definitely a really good one. But again, there's plenty others. Very, very grateful to be a part of.
See, I told you were going to come out and talk about your horses and the stakes at fairgrounds, and then I started asking you about all these things to think back on your career and put you in the spot, but I knew you could handle it, man. Joe Talamo with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, let's talk about the Fairgrounds Oaks. Clairiere for Steve Asmussen. Tell me about Clairiere.
Yeah, she's another very exciting filly. Really looking forward to riding her today. She had a really, really good trip last time. Broke a little slow. She was she was pretty far back, but I remember before the race, Steve gave me all the confidence in the world. He said she's couldn't be doing any better, just ride her with a lot of confidence. And I just tried to be a good pilot, point her in the right direction. And boy, she ran a heck of a race that day. And again, I know she, since that last race, she's been training really good, moving forward. So again, looking for a big race from her today as well.
Yeah, and that was the first time you were aboard her last time out in the Rachel Alexandra. When you're getting ready to ride a horse for the first time like that, what are some of the prep things you did to get ready to ride her for the first time, and what's going to be different about being back aboard her again today?
Yeah, more than anything, it's just watching replays to get affiliated with a horse like that. I mean, time and time again, we constantly get on horses that we've never been on before. And for myself, and I know a lot of other guys, just really going back and watching replays, that really sometimes watching the same race multiple times just to kind of, you know, pick up on anything and try and learn something. And I definitely learned something from watching her. Just, never did a thing wrong in any of her races. Just very, very classy, relaxed. Always came with a nice late run. Could kind of put it wherever you want. So, I mean, that's definitely the kind of things you look for when riding a horse like that. But again, I mean, I know Travel Column's a very nice filly too. Even though we beat her last time, I know she's definitely going to be tough today. And a couple other new fillies in there. I know Todd's filly that's shipping in is 2-for-2. She hasn't done anything wrong. Tom Amos's filly, her first time going long last time was a really nice race. And then Billy Mott's filly, that was a really nice win, her maiden win last time in Florida. So I mean, that's it's, I mean, by no means is it just travel column in there to beat. I mean, that's definitely some other nice fillies. But, you know, again, hopefully we could get out, get a good trip, and let her show her stuff down the stretch.
Jockey Joe Telamo with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, you ride 8 horses today at the fairgrounds, all 8 for Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen, including Sonneman in the Grade 2 New Orleans Classic. What do you know about Sonneman?
He's another one. Ran a heck of a race last time in his prep. One that beat him is Maxfield, and I'm sure everyone knows of him, how good and classy of a horse he is. But Sonneman, he's just a hard-hitting horse. He's run quite a few times, but he seems to show up every time. If he doesn't win, he's right there, second, third, always in the mix. So, again, if we could get a good trip with him, I'm not sure how much. He seems a horse that kind of lays back, mid-pack kind of, and I don't see a ton of speed in there today, so I would imagine he'll be a little bit closer today, depending on pace-wise. But, again, if he shows up like he always has and even runs that race that he did last time, I really think he could be right there.
Joe, I know it's a busy morning for you, so I'll let you go. One final question. Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires was on the program with me in the first half of the show. He walked through all of the stakes races, and when he finished, I asked him if there were any other horses he would have his eye on that program today, and he said yes. He said Joe Telamo is aboard a maiden, a first-time starter for Steve Asmussen in the 5th race. That's number 3, Bedouin Fighter. Don't know what you can tell me about this horse. Obviously a first-time starter. You haven't been aboard. Nobody's been aboard this horse before. What do you know about Bedouin Fighter?
I know as much as you, to be honest. I ride 2 first-time starters for Steve. I haven't been here to work them or know anything about them. But if I do know one thing, I know if they're in or they're ready to roll. So we're definitely going to try our best to win.
Jockey Joe Telamo, as classy as they come. Joe, you're always so gracious with your time. And again, we've been doing this 14 years. Let's hope for another 14. And good luck today. Safe trip every time you get a leg up, my friend.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me. Have a good one.
Appreciate it. Joe Telamo here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like every interview here on the program, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love. You can embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. Yeah, 14 years ago, I remember exactly where we were sitting. We were sitting right by the paddock, kind of undercover there, and Joe came out and got out there early for us, and at that point, he didn't know he was going to be champion apprentice. That was early in the season, obviously. It was a championship season for him in his apprentice year in 2007, but all class, and I've always been impressed with him, his demeanor, his composure, the way he approaches the game. And today he gets a chance to maybe add that coveted Louisiana Derby to his resume. Great stuff. My thanks to Joe for taking the time. Coming up next is trainer Mike Stidham. That's following our Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, then Unsung Heroes at 9:40, and a very busy third hour of the program. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top 5 general sire by the number of 2-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's 4th crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, Hail Must. Cafe Faro, can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the grade three poker and dominating the competition in the grade one Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate to wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Midpoint on the turn, Midnight Bourbon has confronted Franklin Just, and Mandaloon has been right with them. Proxy now tips to the forepath. Oh, Basis on the far outside. Senior Buscador was the wide out past the quarter pole. Three quarters, 1 minute 12.74 seconds. Mandaloon has taken a short lead through the battling Midnight Bourbon. On the outside is a Proxy, then Obesos, Senior Buscador. They come past the 16th. It's Mandaloon. Mandaloon, Proxy and Midnight Bourbon with Florent Giroux. It's Mandaloon. And Mandaloon wins the Risen Star Stakes. Proxy was second. Midnight Bourbon third. And then a three-way go for fourth between Senior Buscador with Obesos and Right and Just.
Mike Penna back with you here on the Equine Forum on HRRN. John Dooley with the call of the Risen Star Stakes. Mandaloon adding that one to his young resume, his only loss coming in the LeCompte Stakes two starts ago. He's back in action today as the 8-5 favorite in the Louisiana Derby. No doubt he could find himself in Bobby Newman's top five in this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Just one stake for three-year-olds on the Derby Trail last weekend, but it was a biggie. Oaklawn held the Grade II $1 million Rebel Stakes, and an all-star cast assembled in the gate for the mile and a 16th test. Caddo River was coming off back-to-back runaway victories, and he was sent off the 6-5 favorite. Bob Baffert's undefeated Concert Tour shipped in from SoCal, and he was the second choice at 8-5. Grade II Kentucky Jockey Club winner Keep Me In Mind was also in the field, along with Grade I winner Get Her Number. The gates opened, and Concert Tour fired right out to the lead. Caddo River was forced to take back and move outside the leader as they headed for the backstretch. They stayed 1-2 till the top of the lane when Joel Rosario asked Concert Tour the question, and he answered in a big way, drawing away from the field to win geared down by over four lengths. His final time was 1:43 flat, and he earned 50 qualifying points with the score. Stablemate Hosier rallied from far back to be second, while Caddo River faded to fifth. Speaking of qualifying points, 40 is usually enough to guarantee a spot in the Kentucky Derby starting gate. As of now, there are seven horses with at least 40 points. Greatest Honor, Life is Good, Mandaloon, Concert Tour, Helium, Weyburn, and Essential Quality. Fairgrounds host their biggest race of the season today, the Grade II $1 million Louisiana Derby at a mile and 3/16. Brad Cox's Mandaloon rebounded off a subpar effort in the Grade III LeCompte to take the Grade II Risen Star last time out, and he figures to be solidly favored. He'll once again take on Midnight Bourbon and Proxy, as well as talented interloper in the multiply stakes-placed Hot Rod Charlie, who ships in from California. This is the first 170-point Derby qualifier of the season, with the winner receiving 100 points and the runner-up getting 40. That means a 1-2 finish today almost assures a spot in the Kentucky Derby on May 1st. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mattoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated, the two-year-old champ, looking at the bluegrass at Keeneland on April 3rd for his next start. Number two, Life is Good, an undefeated son of Into Mischief, heading for the Grade One Santa Anita Derby, also April 3rd. Number three is Concert Tour, also undefeated for Bob Baffert, impressive winner of the Rebel, possibly the Grade One Arkansas Derby on April 10th. Number four, Mandaloon, another son of Into Mischief, impressive winner of the Risen Star, running today at Fairgrounds in the Louisiana Derby. And number five is Greatest Honor, winner of the Holy Bull and Fountain of Youth. He runs next Saturday in the Grade One Florida Derby. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders Farm.
Well, the three-year-olds will be in action beneath the Twin Spires Saturday, May 1st, 42 days, 9 hours, 19 minutes, and just 54 seconds from right now. Of course, we'll be there as your official radio home of the Kentucky Derby in partnership with NBC Sports Audio. We will do that here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can check our website for a listing of affiliates as we edge closer to the first Saturday in May. Mike Stidham is with me now. He is hoping that Proxy can get a huge win for him and take the next step toward Louisville later today in the Louisiana Derby. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
You are going to be a busy man today. You have horses in three of those greatest stakes that we'll talk about, but let's start with that Louisiana Derby. What's the key for Proxy turning the tables on Mandaloon?
Well, I mean, the obvious key is that Proxy needs to stay engaged and run straight today, which in the past he's, you know, done some different antics in each of his last couple of races. So we're hoping that the blinkers will keep him a little more focused and keep him, you know, available to Velasquez when he calls on him. So we'll find out.
Have you had other horses like this in the past, Mike, that had that same issue? You added blinkers and things worked out for the best?
Oh, without a doubt. Well, one of them is Mystic Guide. Mystic Guide was another horse that his first several races, you know, he was running well, but he just wasn't really finishing off the race. And when we added the blinkers, you know, his numbers went forward in every race, and he wound up winning a Grade Two at Belmont, and then placing in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga. He won the Grade Two, and then placed in the Grade One Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont. So, and now we're going to be running him in the Dubai World Cup next week.
For people that don't understand, Mike, when a trainer adds blinkers to a horse, as you just alluded to, it is typically to increase their focus. But what things cause a horse, I guess in particular Proxy, for example, to lose focus during their race?
Well, remember, you know, a horse's vision is different than a person's vision. A horse has, you know, vision to where they can actually see what's coming from behind them. They can see, you know, they have really good peripheral vision. And with some young horses, you know, they can get preoccupied with what's going on around them instead of, you know, what they should be focused on in a race, which is what's ahead of them. So what you try to do with the blinkers is you try to take away some of, not all of it, but some of that peripheral vision so they're more focused on, you know, moving forward.
Is there anything, Mike, that can work the opposite way where maybe, you know, look, Proxy has never run a bad race. He has never finished worse than second in five starts. Is there a little bit of trepidation where, maybe this could cause something you know, where he wouldn't run as well as even he has been without the blinkers?
Well, without a doubt, that's always a possibility. Blinkers can, you know, make a horse more revved up and make them use themselves up early in the race more than they normally would, stopping them from relaxing and settling and being able to finish. So, you know, that's always a possibility when you're adding blinkers that it could work, you know, against you. The thing I like about Proxy with the blinkers is we've, you know, had him on in most of his gallops along with the three breezes that he's had, and it only seems to keep him more, you know, straight on in his gallops, more, you know, like I've been saying, focused, and it has not gotten him all, you know, G'd up and, you know, too racy when we put the blinkers on. So I feel pretty confident that, you know, the only effect that they'll have on him will be a positive one.
I mentioned that ultra-consistent race record, and I think any trainer, any owner would give their right arm to have a horse that's run five times and had 2 seconds, three-thirds, and runner-up in a couple of graded stakes. But when did you first get a sense, Mike, that you had a serious runner on your hands with Proxy?
Well, early last year, when we first got Proxy to the races back at Monmouth, actually it was not until October, so it was later in the year, but he hadn't really done anything real flashy in the morning. We loved the way he moved. He had a beautiful stride, but his works were just, you know, okay. They weren't fantastic. So since we have his half-sister, Micheline, who is a graded stakes filly on the grass, we decided, well, let's go ahead and, you know, enter him in a grass race for his first start, and then we can get a line on him. Well, the race came off the turf and was run on a fast dirt track, and he, you know, broke just a touch slow, got himself shuffled back early, and he really came running nicely late in the race to only get beat a neck. So at that point, we said, well, you know, let's not move him from the dirt, because obviously anybody with a nice bred two-year-old, you know, is hoping for a two-turn dirt horse at that time of the year, hoping to go in this direction. And then, you know, as soon as we ran him at the fairgrounds, he broke his maiden nicely and came right back and won the A other then. So we haven't, you know, had any thoughts of going back to grass with the way he's been running on the dirt.
I can't blame you. You know, again, we talked earlier about turning the tables on a horse like Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon, who beat Proxy two starts ago. Size up that competition for me, Mike. I know you've looked at this field. You've seen Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon in person, but now you've got some others that come in too. Size up the competition and tell me about the challenge that Proxy faces later today.
Without a doubt, this is you know, a very tough race with the addition of Hot Rod Charlie coming in from California. You know, it's a solid Derby prep. And look, we're not going to be able to go out there and just, you know, run the same race we've been running. We have to take a step forward today, not only to win this race, but to feel confident moving forward, going to the Kentucky Derby. So, again, it's a tough race, but we have to really show up today to feel confident.
Trainer Mike Stidham with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He has horses entered in three graded stakes on that Louisiana Derby Day card, including the Louisiana Derby. You just heard him talk about Proxy in that race. Mike, let's work backwards. Race number 12 is the Muniz Memorial Classic Stakes, and Pixelate will go to the post in there for you. Tell me a little bit about Pixelate.
Well, I mean, you can see by his form, you know, he started 15 times, and he's been in the money 12 times. He's won four races with 5 seconds, so he's ultra-consistent horse. You know, every time we send him out there, whether it's going a mile all the way up to a mile and a quarter. So he's one of those horses that's just a really, really competitive, you know, tough competitor. And, you know, he only got beat 3 lengths in a grade one in his last start at Gulfstream in the Pegasus Turf Invitational. So, I mean, we're looking for another big effort here. He drew a bit of a poor post being in the 12 hole, but, you know, he's got enough tactical speed where he can it's going to be a long run to the first turn. So I think Saez will be able to get him, get him over and save some ground going around that first turn.
I thought he ran his eyeballs out in the Pegasus World Cup turf. That was a really good race for him. And as you said, he was only beaten 3 lengths. Mike, he didn't have Lasix that day. None of the contenders that day could race on Lasix. He gets Lasix again today. Is that something that can help Pixelate, or does it really not matter?
Well, look, he's never been a bad bleeder. You know, we've never had an instance where he bled through Lasix, and he did not bleed when we ran him at Gulfstream. So I don't know that it really makes a difference with him. I think he runs well on or off Lasix.
All right, and lastly, we'll move on to Roadster, a horse you'll saddle for the very first time in the New Orleans Classic Stakes. Grade 1 winner of the Santa Anita Derby earlier in his career. Tell me a little bit more about Roadster.
Well, the way I wound up getting Roadster in my barn was, he's been off a year, and Baffert was starting to get him ready, and I trained for these owners, Speedway Stable, Peter Fleur, and Casey Wiener, and they decided that they thought that there were a lot more opportunities in the Midwest and the East Coast where I go to, on the East Coast for the summer. So they thought there were a lot more opportunities. There's still a chance that this horse, he's a grade one winner already and grade one placed in the Malibu. So they still have hopes that maybe, Roadster would be good enough to be a stallion at some point. So, you know, we're going to get him started back and hopefully look at some good races in New York this summer after this, and hopefully make a stallion out of him. But he's training well. He's always had quarter crack problems with his feet since he was a two-year-old. Right now his feet are in probably as good a shape as they've ever been in. Bob sent him to me in good condition. And, we've got plenty in him work-wise going into the race off the year layoff, and so we'll see what happens. But he's training well, and he's very healthy right now.
Well, Mike Stidham, no stranger to winning big races. He's saddled more than 2,100 winners in his career. He's looking for more later today. Mike, appreciate the visit. As always, you're very kind with your time, and let's go win 3 later today.
I would love to do that, and I really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, thanks, Mike. Mike Stidham here on HRRN. Yeah, interesting comments about Proxy, and really, he knows that this horse can run. He's known it for a long time, and now he has to put it together. The blinkers, maybe that makes the difference. Interesting stuff when he started talking about horses losing focus, especially a young horse like this. I love the way he put it, talking about, the things that are going on around them. They can be a distraction. Hopefully the blinkers, and it could work the other way. He admitted that. But hopefully the blinkers make the difference, and we'll see Proxy close that gap on Mandaloon. But that's going to be a great showdown later today in the Louisiana Derby. When I come back, it is time for a segment that you will not want to miss. It's become one of the more popular segments. I've received such great feedback. It is Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, a special visit with Lena L'Oreal coming up next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify, a 4-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the 3-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including recent Grade 1 winner, Cafe Faro in Japan.
It's Cafe Faro in front, Cafe Faro, and along the fence, AL Master, Cafe Faro. Can this be American Faro's Japan first Group 1 winner? Yes, it is.
Eddie Woods' training graduates include 2020 Horse of the Year Authentic and Eclipse Champion Sprinter, Whitmore. A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Visit eddiewoods.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods, Hudson.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players, content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Horse racing full of unsung heroes, including my special guest here this morning, Lena L'Oreal, who is the longtime exercise rider for Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey. Began working with Shug in 1984 after moving from her native Sweden. She is still with him today. Shug says she is an integral part of his success in his Hall of Fame career. And Lena, this week's unsung hero. Lena, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate the visit.
Oh, sure.
You know, 37 years is an awful long time to do anything, but to be an exercise rider for a man of the stature and an operation the stature of Shug McGahey, boy, what a ride this has been, huh?
Yes, I mean, that's I'm so lucky because I get to work with some of the very best horses, and we have all the best resources, so that makes my job a lot easier, too. They come from
good
farms. How
does a girl from...
Yes?
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's good. You go.
How does a girl from Sweden end up working with such a prestigious operation like Shug McGahey?
Well, when I first, I traveled in Europe for a couple of years with a girlfriend. And then my girlfriend said, we need to go to America too. So I said, okay, I'm going to go for 6 months. And then when I came over here, at first I freelanced for a couple of months, and then Shug needed somebody to go to Florida. And that's why I approached him about coming to with a job.
Wow, and still 37 years later, the relationship still stands and still going strong. He sings your praises. When I reached out to him and asked him if there was anybody he could think of that deserved to be an unsung hero on this particular segment, he immediately sent back to me and gave me your name and your number, and he is so proud of you, Lena.
Well, I'm proud to be part of the team. You know, that we can work together and have, because it's teamwork. Everybody's important. Everybody has to do their work. And then, of course, you have to have good horses to get to the top level, which is where we like to be.
How do you describe your role as an exercise rider?
I'm a little bit of a teacher. Like, you work with, your horses are like young children, and my job is to get them ready for the races. Now, some of them you can teach them in one day. You just show them one time, and they know exactly what to do. And some of them you have to practice over and over and over again, just like how children can be. Not everybody learns the same way. So, but my job is very exciting because there's always something going on.
Yeah, it's such a great way to put it. I love that, being a teacher, working with these young horses, getting them to develop mentally and physically. I would imagine it's about both of those, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's, I think, is the biggest difference between regular horses, good horses, and really great horses. The great horses have a special mind. They have a special mindset. They usually really enjoy their work. They understand what you want them to do. So a lot of times my job is easy because they already want to do right. You know, and those are the other horses that you really have to practice with and have to do the things a lot more slower. It's more of a challenge. Because talent only gets you so far.
There has to be more development. If you're the teacher, tell me about some of your prized pupils, if you will.
Well, it's been a lot of them. I have, but two horses that I've worked with are in the Hall of Fame, so I guess I have to mention them. That would be Lure and Personal Ensign. Lure was a lot of fun, though. I had him from when he was when he first came into the track, and I had him his whole career. But he was fun to work with. He knew he was good, and obviously everybody could see how good he was too. But he knew he was good, so. He was a lot of fun. Like, he'd take you to a lot of places. You get to run in the best races. So I would have to say he's probably number one that way.
And Personal Ensign, she doesn't take a back seat to many. Tell me about working with Personal Ensign.
Well, she was not that fun maybe to work with. She was pretty bossy, which most good fillies are. You know, it was sort of her way. And there was always a lot of pressure with her because, you know, when you're perfect all the time, everybody wants to see you stub your toe. You know, so you knew every time you went over there was a chance that it was not going to be perfect today. And I would have to give a lot of credit too, to Randy Romero that rode her all but the first race to keep up with the pressure and we all could work together.
Did you feel some pressure when you were getting on her in the mornings?
Yes. I mean, it's obviously it's more serious than just going out there and, you know, Chuck wants it to be done right every day. He doesn't want you to come back and say, oh, I don't feel so good today. And that comes with almost all the better horses, you know. I mean, a lot of these horses are worth a lot of money, too. It's not like you just, you know, somebody's trusting you with their price possession.
That's a great way to put it, and it's so true. Lena L'Oreal, the longtime exercise rider for Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee, she has done this since 1984, and what a ride it has been. You heard her talk about some of her prize pupils as she looks at herself as a teacher, as an exercise rider, Lure and Personal Ensign. Lena, who are a couple others that are always going to hold a special place in your heart?
I would say Dispute. She won the Kentucky Oaks, and I think that for me was the biggest thrill I've had in racing. But there are so many horses, and some horses on some levels, they're not that talented, but they give you all they have, so they have a special place too. You know, but I think not only good with me, but then they go on and they have a big impact on the racing game.
So Dispute winning the Kentucky Oaks would be a bigger moment for you than Hall of Famer Personal Ensign remaining undefeated in that Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs.
Oh, I'll tell you, when she won, I thought I was 1 inch away from disaster.
Really?
So I would say when she won, I was relieved.
What a moment. And there have been so many special moments for you.
Yes.
And this is really a family affair for you, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, my not only at work, but my husband works in racing, and now my daughter goes to University of Louisville, and she studies equine for the racing program. She actually had you as a guest speaker, I think.
She probably did. I've done that a couple of times, actually, for U of L.
Yes. Yep. So, yes, wow. We are a whole racetrack family. As far as work, too, there's a racing family because a lot of the people I work with have not only worked for Shug for a long time, but the horses are generational horses that you get that keep coming. And that's exciting.
What's the most rewarding part of the job for you, considering the fact that you stay behind the scenes, you're out of the day-to-day spotlight? What's the most rewarding part of being an exercise rider?
Oh. Well, it's always rewarding to see them do well. But a lot of times you really have to enjoy when it's really good because you do a lot of work and not all the horses come through for you. So you really enjoy the special moments when there are really, truly special moments at the track. Because that's what we work for, to win the big races.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When you started, Lena, at the age of 13, working around horses in Sweden before you came to the United States, was this always a dream of yours to be around horses and do something with horses as your lifelong career?
No, and I think my mother usually tells me that if she had known that I was going to do this my whole life, she wouldn't have let me do it. I think I thought, too, that after a few years of traveling and riding that I would go back home and get a real life. But, I consider myself so lucky. I'm very excited to come to work every day. You know, there's always, with my job, there's always something going on. It's never boring. And sometimes you can have the best day or the worst day. But you all know there's always tomorrow. Tomorrow there's something else going on. So, you know, that I like.
Yeah, it is such a rewarding profession. There are highs, there are lows. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But it is so rewarding. And I can imagine for you as a teacher, when your kids go out there and perform well in the afternoons, there's probably no greater satisfaction than that.
Right. And then, like I said, you're part of a team. You have a groom behind them that has been working with them. Obviously, Shug is always the one that decides what we do, but it's everybody's working together. And that's what's rewarding.
So if your daughter came to you and said, Ma, I want to be an exercise rider for a living, what do you tell her?
No, I don't think she wants to do that. She wants to be in racing, but she does not. She doesn't really know what she wants to do. She wants to be in racing, but she's done photography. She does a little bit of. She works a little bit everywhere, trying different things. I think she actually wants to work on the front side of the races.
Wow.
More putting the races together. But I will tell you, for me, the racetrack, everything I have in my life is because of the racetrack. So if she wants to be part of the racetrack as a career, I would have no problem with it.
Yeah, well said. Lena L'Oreal. Here on this Unsung Heroes segment presented by Claiborne. She is, as you can tell, one of racing's unsung heroes. Lena, I say it every week. There are so many people in our sport that make this sport a success, and it is not possible without each and every one of them. And you've alluded to it a couple of times. There are grooms. There are exercise riders. There are trainers. There are assistant trainers. It takes a village, and you are very much a part of that. And congratulations on being an unsung hero.
Well, thank you very much. Very nice of you.
Yeah, and thank you for being here, and thank you for all of your hard work and dedication to this sport. Keep it up, and many more years to come. Let's go win some more races, Lena.
Yes, my pleasure.
All right, thank you so much, Lena L'Oreal. Here on Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. This segment comes your way every other week here on the Equine Forum, and it is such a delight to visit with people like Lena and hear their stories. Really a privilege to be able to bring you those stories. Our sport is filled with unsung heroes, which is the exact reason I decided to create this segment. If you know someone you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, nominate them today. All you have to do is email me their story. You can do it, mike@horseracingradio.net. That's mike@horseracingradio.net. Send me their story, and I will do my best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. I'll be back with more right after this quick word from Claiborne.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired 6 millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include graded stakes winner Plum Ali.
But it's going to be Plum Ali, and she's now 3 for 3.
Sharp Samurai, international star Shivaji, and Birdie Queen, plus these standout performers. In the ring, his yearlings sold up to $260,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
All right, still to come, In the Room with Sean Clancy. He visits with Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez. That is one you don't want to miss. It comes up in just about 6 or 7 minutes from right now. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history and our industry star of the week, which is Deshaun Parker, winner of the George Wolfe Memorial Award. Deshaun will be with me for an interview at the end of the show at 10:40 Eastern Time. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, recently I started telling you about the brand new Outdoor Superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. And I have spent my entire life pursuing, well, about three passions, really. Horse racing, the outdoors, and, of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when I'm not at the racetrack or I'm not sitting in Heinz Field, there's a pretty good bet I'm in the woods somewhere. So trust me when I tell you, if you love hunting or fishing, you need to check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. It's owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, so you can talk racing, you can talk hunting. Fantastic spot. They even have two indoor archery ranges. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. 2 hours in the books, one more to go. Make sure you stay with me. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever it might be. You can stream me live at horseracingradio.net. Busy, busy third hour kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy coming up next. He visits with Hall of Fame jockey Ramon Dominguez. We'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, and I'll visit with journeyman jockey Deshaun Parker. That's all next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come past the 16th. It's Mandaloon. Mandaloon, Proxy and Midnight Bourbon with Farron Giroux. It's Mandaloon. And Mandaloon wins the Risen Star Stakes.
He was 4 weeks back to the Risen Star off the LeComp. We're coming back in 5 weeks to the Louisiana Derby now. If all goes well, we'll have 6 weeks before the Kentucky Derby. So I think he's continued to move forward in every start. We're looking for another move forward. And, you know, he's a good workhorse. He gives you what you need and what you want to see in the morning to feel like you're fit when you lead him over there. And I feel like at the end of the day, you know, he's cut out to be a mile and a half horse, especially with the Empire Maker on the bottom side. So I feel very confident that as long as we can show up and do what we need to do and take care of business on Saturday, that, you know, we'll be able to move forward to the Kentucky Derby.
It's still Midnight Bourbon, past the 16th. Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon, Vince LeComp.
Obviously, in the LeComp, we had a really good trip. He was able to get out on a pretty easy lead that day and wire him. But in the Risen Star, I was real happy. I was real happy to see him. He sat off of Right and Just, who's going to be in the Louisiana Derby this time, too. But I really, more than anything, I love his post, too. Because, again, if someone goes out there, he's definitely pretty content laying second or third. So just going to be one of them races. Hopefully we can just get a good trip and take it from there.
But Be Nice is well clear with 70 yards to go, and it's win number 5,000 for the gentleman jockey, Deshaun Parker. Wins by about 5 to sweet sound.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
I love that. The gentleman jockey, Deshaun Parker, 5,843 wins to his credit. That was win number 5,000 at Mountaineer. Came a few years back, and Deshaun has just continued to do his thing. The 50-year-old Cincinnati native honored this week with the George Wolfe Memorial Award. He'll be with me later in the program coming up at 10:40 Eastern Time. Thanks for being with me on this third hour of the program. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, wishing everyone a very happy spring. Winter is done. We're on to spring, and we do it by welcoming the Louisiana Derby, the lone prep race for the Kentucky Derby, at least points race, on today's schedule anywhere in the country, and it promises to be a good one. Throughout the poll question for you this morning, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, so many of you taking time to share your thoughts with me. Who is your pick to win today's Louisiana Derby at the Fairgrounds? And gave you a few choices. The three morning line favorites, Mandaloon, Proxy, Hot Rod Charlie, and then the fourth category is other, and I asked you to please comment and specify if you choose the other. Let me know who you think, other than the top three, can pull off a bit of an upset. Mandaloon is the leader in the clubhouse right now. 39% of you saying it's Mandaloon who's going to win the race. Not surprising. He's been very, very good. Only loss coming in LeCompte, two starts back, and he's the 8-5 morning line favorite. So this stays in line with what the morning line odds maker is looking at and what the betting probably will reflect later today at the fairgrounds. In terms of the other category, a few of you choosing other, Run Classic getting a vote, Midnight Bourbon getting a couple of votes. And you heard from Joe Talamo earlier in the show, who will be aboard Midnight Bourbon. He said he's a big horse, but he has a lot of early speed for a big horse, and he breaks well for a big horse, and he's thinking that the trip is going to be very similar to what he experienced last time out in the Risen Star. Now, that trip resulted in a third-place finish, but Joe has learned a lot about this horse over the past couple of starts, and he's thinking with his pedigree, with his size, and with his continued development, Midnight Bourbon can be a horse to reckon with later this afternoon. If you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this program. It will be posted shortly after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires kicked it off. Chris Griffin from Sam Houston previewed their Texas Champions Night, which comes up tonight. Joe Talamo at 9 o'clock. Mike Stidham was here at 9:25, and then just a short time ago, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, Lena L'Oreal. Fantastic visit with her, talking about her 37 years working with Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee as his exercise rider. Again, the podcast available on our website, horseracingradio.net, coming up at 11 a.m. Eastern. Well, time now to go in the room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. This week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez.
Here comes Dominguez now. Here comes Dominguez now with Wet One. Wet One coming down to the line. Oh, what a day for Ramon Dominguez. What a day for Ramon Dominguez. He wins a record-tying sixth.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Ramon Dominguez. The 44-year-old multiple Eclipse Award-winning jockey won nearly 5,000 races, including the Travers, the Breeders' Cup Turf twice, the Arlington Million, the Woodward, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and Road Stars, Havre de Grace, Gio Ponti, Better Talk Now, and so many others. Welcome to the show, Ramon.
Thank you, Sean, for having me.
Now, I said jockey Ramon Dominguez at the introduction because you will always be a jockey in my book. You retired after suffering a head injury in 2013. How's retired life?
Retired life is good. I continue working on different things, just a new chapter in my life, and certainly was smiling when you said jockey.
Exactly. What keeps you busy these days? I know it's been almost 8 years, I guess, since you retired. What keeps you busy?
So, yes, busy with different things. I mean, personally, just still involved with things family-wise, enjoying family, and just enjoying also Saratoga, which is home for me now, Saratoga Springs. And I have been working on a couple projects, one of them a riding crop that I invented, and a lot of people know about in the horse racing world, doing also going into the other equestrian disciplines. And most recently, started working with a friend on a platform that we named Exacta Box, which we, through that platform, we're looking to bring content to the Spanish-speaking horse racing fan. And that has been something that we have enjoyed, and just do an interview and pre and post race analysis, among other things. So, yeah, that keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah, you were always playing the long game, saving your money, thinking about your next step, right? I mean, you know, you were always one of those guys you kind of watched that was planning, you know, the rest of your life.
Yes, I am. Certainly, I'm happy with just living today and throughout my career. I didn't have to have the most expensive thing. So that certainly has helped through these retirement days where I am not making the money that I was making when I was riding. However, there is no huge needs in terms of having to fulfill something that was too big for my financial capability at the time. So nowadays, just enjoying life's simple pleasures in some ways.
Yeah, you've always been good at that. How tough was it to be forced to retire? I mean, you didn't really get your choice. You had a fall and had a dramatic brain injury. How tough was that for you?
So it was tough once that I came to realize that that was going to happen for a while after my accident when I had cognitively capable of thinking about what was happening and so on. I was planning on coming back, and that was pretty exciting for me to come back to riding. And then when I realized that was no longer a choice, you do go through what I call like a grieving period, where despite being your job or what you did as a career, you can't help to feel in some ways attached to that, or as if that is part of who you are, even if that's not the case. So it was a little bit difficult walking away or separating myself from the fact that I was no longer going to ride races. But I kind of with the support of my family, friends, and so on. And shortly afterwards, I ended up going to the track against my will, really, because my wife pushed me to go to the track. And that was the best thing that I could have done, because it really helped me to turn the page. And in no time, I was able to enjoy the races and just looking at it from a different perspective without feeling a sense of loss, like, oh, my gosh, I wish I was there. So as I said in the beginning of our conversation, it's just another chapter in my life, and I'm fully embracing it and enjoying it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I retired, I kind of now look back at it like that was a segment of my life. I enjoyed it. It was fun. But I've moved on, and I'm not that person anymore. I'm not really the you know, it's almost like college. You look back and say, okay, that was my college life. Is that kind of how you look at riding races?
Well said. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly how I feel. Yep.
And I've had my share of concussions and suffered. I felt like I got better the further. I feel like I've gotten better the further away from those, you know, kind of the concussions that I've had. Is that something that do you physically and mentally feel better as you've gotten further away from that injury?
I have been extremely blessed, and even the doctors who have seen me, from my neurologist to my neuropsychologist, they are blown away by how amazingly well I have progressed in my recovery overall. So at the same time, I mean, the main thing that forced my retirement, it wasn't whether I was capable of getting on a horse, is just the risk involved with me after so many head injuries, and the most recent one or the latest one certainly being at a totally different level. But nowadays, we know, science know, that 1 + 1 when it comes to head injury doesn't equal 2. It's something that is immensely greatly. And so for me to be exposed to even have a small head injury or a normal concussion was no longer going to be a normal concussion, and it was going to bring along some negative effects. So the doctor say, no, we cannot clear you. You cannot go back to riding. So that was my case.
Yeah, and that's pretty sobering, right, when they tell you that? I mean, they told me that. It's a big wake-up call when you kind of hear that.
It is, and it, of course, there are two ways to look at it, and actually both ways came into play, where one is, gosh, this is unfortunate, this is not good, just not being able to ride races anymore, but at the same time, being responsible in terms of doing what the doctors said that I needed to do. Also, allow me to kind of step back and look at it from a totally different perspective, in knowing that I'm lucky and that I'm lucky to follow their recommendation and be able to at least live a good life and not have to suffer the consequences of getting my head again.
Definitely. And you've lived that good life since then. I mean, it seems like you've taken, I'm sure it was an adaptive period to kind of come to grips to it, but it seems like you're living a quality life now. And you always say, living the moment, and kind of, you know, enjoy today. It's something that you've always kind of followed.
True. And of course, I mean, one thing that perhaps did my retirement or made it a little bit more difficult is the fact that professionally, I mean, it requires, as you know, a lot of time and a lot of effort and so many different obstacles to overcome to get to a point where you feel satisfied that you are accomplishing your goals. And that was the case with me, where I was living the highlight of my career. I was doing so well. And then, I mean, I guess my point is it would have probably been easier if, even if it wasn't by choice to retire, if I wasn't the downside of my career or my days as a jockey were kind of coming to an end, that you say, okay, well, I had a good career, but I was actually enjoying finally great success or great accomplishment given the work that I put prior to it. So having said that, again, I just count my blessings, and when I reflect back on my career, I do it while smiling and being blessed of all the great things that I was able to do and the people that I met and so on. And now definitely living the moment, but also enjoying this new chapter and even simple stuff like going for a run, something that I enjoy very much, and things that perhaps before, even if I could do it, it was totally different. Going for a run before, it was with a plastics on and a plastic suit on and to lose weight, and nowadays I do it just for fun.
Now, Ramon, I'm just a guy who runs, okay? I mean, I'm a guy who runs, and you are a runner. I've seen you at the starts of the 5K. People say, did you run the 5K with Ramon? I go, well, I mean, we ran the same 5K, but I didn't run it with him. So you're very fast and very very dedicated to it. Is that something, was that something that kind of replaced riding a little bit to really get motivated and kind of run like that?
I absolutely love it, and it's exactly what you said. In some ways, this has replaced the thrill of riding a race because it's really, there are so many similarities. Like, I'm in the starting line for a 5K race, and my heart is beating so fast, almost like if I'm in the starting gate to ride the Kentucky Derby. And it's silly, but it's because I like it that much. And I would love to be able to put out that time and get better and get faster. I have been dealing with some injuries, actually, while running, just some stress fractures. And as it turned out, later on in life, I have developed, my bone density is not quite where it should be, something they call osteopenia, which is no osteoporosis. But so I had to kind of cut back and not run as many miles a week. And it's something that actually is hereditary, which my mom has it. So the good news is with men, it can be reversed, so I'm hoping that I can reverse it because I do like running that much. I absolutely could make I don't want to say a career out of it because I cannot live off running, but I certainly love the whole competition and the strategy behind it.
Yeah, see, you're running too fast. I've been trying to tell you that. You got to slow down and get there, get in the back with us. With us, you know, us mortal people. What's your fastest 5K run time in your career?
The first one was last year. I ran a 17:05. So my goal will be to break into the 16s, hopefully this year. So we'll see.
All right. I'll see you at the start, and I'll see you at the finish when you're, you've cooled down and had three glasses of water and, ate a few bananas. I'll see you then. jockeys live by the scales all day, every day. When was the last time you get on a scale? Is that something you think about anymore? I mean, you never think about your weight or worry about it. Must be a good feeling to not have to worry about it.
Yes, it is a great feeling. And I nowadays, of course, I don't have to weigh myself. And however, I haven't really gained a lot of weight. And some people will see me and say, oh, my gosh, you're just lucky that you were built like that. And I do feel like if I would live a quote-unquote a normal life and just eat what I wanted when I wanted, I know that my body would look differently now. So it's just something that becomes a way of life. Nowadays, I mean, I can eat anything I want, but I don't even think about it. When I'm going to eat something, I know what to eat and what not to eat. Like, I like a burger. I wouldn't eat a burger. Or pizza or anything like that. I don't know. It's not even a conscious thought. It's just I will gravitate towards eating a salad. So, but it's great to, for example, one thing that was, because I was fortunate, although I'm told when I was riding to I would lose weight daily, but it wasn't something drastic. But the one thing that did bother me is when I picked up the overnight and I saw that in 2 or 3 days, I had a light mound, not to be able to drink as much water as I wanted at night. That did bother me because I would be thirsty after riding all day, and I had to really be careful about how much water I will drink because the next day I had a light mound. So nowadays I can drink as much water as I want, so that's definitely something that I enjoy and I don't take for granted.
No doubt. I mean, that's what people don't probably understand when it comes to jockeys. It really comes down to water weight, and you have to really be careful just drinking that water. And you adopted kind of an unusual but obviously effective style. Almost, I always said you kind of hovered above the horse's center of balance. Was that natural or something you worked on? I mean, how did you develop that style?
So when I started riding in Venezuela, where I'm from, there was no jockey school, so I learned from at first at a couple of farms and basically on my own, and it became something that I just by learning on my own, I adopted some, let's just call it bad habits, just because I didn't know. And although sometimes people will be like, oh my gosh, the way you even swing to use the crop or the way you look on a horse. And it was something that if I had a choice, I would have done it differently. I would have looked like somebody else that I know that looks much better than me. But it's that mentality of it's hard to teach an old dog a new trick. And after you have done it for so many years, it's very difficult to really change drastically, at least your style. So, but yes, my style was a product in terms of physically how I look or mechanically on a horse, just learning on my own and doing it over and over. But it was not the best way to do it. So in the other part of the style, they actually touch with the horse and the finesse and the listening to the horse, that also was a product of my own repetition, but also learning from my own mistakes. And but it also has to do with my beginnings of really being around horses, which was in a show jumping. I did it for a year, and I learned so many great things. That was an amazing foundation for me, even as a jockey, just that touch and that communication with the horse.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, watching you ride, it was you had a real uncanny style, but you had the horses were very listening to the horses, that light finesse style, and it always seemed like horses were, you always kind of had them light on their feet. When you needed to make that move, you could make that move. You know, turning for home on the grass, you always kind of knew Ramon Dominguez, that horse. For you, who's the Mount Rushmore of jockeys? I mean, the best, you know, four or five, or you, the guys that you watched, emulated, you know, kind of tried to be like, guys out there that you grew up watching and riding against, who were they?
So there were so many. I mean, from back home when I first started riding, but then as I moved to the U.S., and I always say that I learned from any jockey and every jockey. If you ask me about a jockey, I can tell you what I learned from them, maybe good or maybe something that I'm like, well, I learned that I don't do this because this guy was doing it incorrectly. And here in the U.S., it is difficult for me. Or I cannot say only two or three jockeys because, again, I learn from all of them. I look up to so many of them. I'm a big fan of Jose Lescano. To me, is an amazing, and actually as well as he has done on the rated jockey, especially on the grass, he's amazing. I'm a big fan of Joel Rosario. To me, as a closer, he's incredible. And talking about that finesse and that touch and that communication with the horse, he has that to a T, where he's able to get those horses relaxed and then fly home. But just like I mentioned those two, I can talk about any and many of them that have an asset or a strength in certain area. And so I can pick and see so many great attributes some of them have in different ways. And that's great to be able to recognize and acknowledge that, because as you are riding, you can also try to emulate or try to follow certain things that they may do.
That's great. Exactly. You want to learn from all of them different styles, and you try to learn from everybody. I'm going to borrow this question from one of my favorite podcasts, How I Built This. When you look back at your success, Ramon, how much of it was luck and how much of it was hard work or talent? I mean, when you look back at your career.
So I was extremely fortunate. I mean, you can say, gosh, you were so lucky that, for example, that I had the agent that I had for the last 13 years, which without a question, he was an extremely key component of our accomplishments. Steve Rushing is just an incredible guy. So you can say, well, you were lucky to have him. But then if you unpeel the onion, so to speak, and go back to how I was able to connect or to start working with him, it wasn't he didn't choose me because something in particular, because I look good on a horse or because anything. It was he actually did his work and he asked around and about jockeys, and he realized that maybe I had what he was looking for in terms of the one thing that people don't talk about. Let's put aside the needed physical abilities. But equally important, your character, how you conduct yourself. You are somebody who's dedicated. You're somebody who's responsible. And I know that I had it. So when you look at it from that view, the so-called luck doesn't seem to be so much luck, but the fact that I put the work into it, I did things correctly. So, yes, not having said that, of course, things have to click into play. Place I went once we got together, things started happening correctly. We started winning races. So, but I do feel like I also put the work in the things that were the way they were supposed to in order for things to flow correctly, if that makes sense. But even going back to the beginning of my career, and funny because I was part of a call yesterday with somebody with a trouble retirement fund, and we spoke about this, that there was a key and pivotal moment when I was coming from the show jumping school to my house, taking a bus, which I had to take a couple buses, and a kid in the back of the bus called me because I had my helmet or my whip in my hand, and he asked me if I was a jockey, and I said no, and he said that he was riding race horses in a close by training center. And he told me where he was, and the next day I ended up going there, and that was my first time getting on a racehorse. But it wasn't until recent, a few months ago, because we have remaining in contact. He's actually right now galloping in Japan. And he said to me, Ramon, I don't think that I ever told you why I was in that bus. And I said, I don't think so. And he said, well, I was in that bus because I was talking too much in class, and the teacher told me to go home. So when you talk about luck or coincidence, I mean, what were the chances of that happening? Yes, that led to me going to the track, and the rest is history.
Wow, what a story. They say, give yourself the opportunity to get lucky, and I guess that's kind of what you've done. You got lucky meeting him on that bus that day, but then you took advantage of that luck and built a stellar career on hard work and I think what you said, dedication and being dedicated and being responsible. And that's I'd probably sum up watching you ride through the years: talent, dedication, and being responsible. And we miss you. Miss watching you. You know, that turning for home, revving that horse up, that hovering style. But we're sure glad you're still in the game and making a positive difference. Hopefully, we will see you at Saratoga this summer.
Thank you. All right, John.
Wow, what a visit. My thanks to Sean Clancy. My thanks to Ramon Dominguez. You can catch that segment every single week here at 10 a.m. Eastern on the Equine Forum. But that may be, and I've known Ramon for many, many years. He's worked with us here on the network as a commentator. That may be the most open conversation I have ever heard Ramon have with anyone publicly about his injury and about his recovery. And then to hear him talk about the things he's doing now in retirement and the success he's having with running races. Sean talked to him about running 5Ks. And 17 minutes, 17.05 his best time for a 5K. Are you kidding me? And he wants to get under 16. I think we just sent a tweet from the HRN account and said we wouldn't bet against him. No way in hell. Wow, what a great interview that was. Really enjoyed it. And again, my thanks to Sean and Ramon in the room with Sean Clancy every single Saturday right here on the program. Make sure you're locked into it. Going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker and get you set for my very special interview coming up with Deshaun Parker. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Now let's see what Smoke Glacken has left as they come to the top of the stretch. Smoke Glacken is the one to catch. Here's Stopwatch now on the outside. Open Form is next. Then comes Trafalgar. And on they go now to the eighth pole. Smoke Glacken has the lead. On the outside, Mike Smith all over Stopwatch. 4 lengths back now, Crypto Star. Inside the 16th pole. Here's Stopwatch and Crypto Star with a bold move on the outside. Smoke Glacken on the inside. Crypto Star wins the Derby.
Announcer Tony Bentley with the call of the 1997 running of the Louisiana Derby. It was win number 5 for Hall of Fame jockey Pat Day. He has won more renewals of the Louisiana Derby than any jockey in history. His first coming all the way back in 1986 when he won it with a horse by the name of Country Light for trainer Steve Penrod and Cherry Valley Farm. Pat Day was as good as they get when he showed up in the Bayou. And Crypto Star, by the way, that final running time, 142.60, still the speed record when the race was run at a mile and a 16th. So he held the record and still holds the record to this day for that distance. Of course, today, a mile and 3/16, the new distance of the Louisiana Derby. Pat Day etched in racing history. And with that, it is time now to take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. This segment presented each week by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He only made six career starts, but one of them resulted in a victory in the Kentucky Derby. And he burst onto the racing scene 25 years ago this month with a win in the Louisiana Derby. His name was Grindstone. A foal from the first crop of 1990 Kentucky Derby winner Unbridled, Grindstone was owned and bred by Lexington, Kentucky native William T. Young in the name of his Overbrook farm. Sent to Dwayne Lucas, Grindstone raced just twice as a juvenile before undergoing surgery for a bone chip in a knee. But after a seven-month layoff, he returned to the races with a runner-up finish in Allowance Company at Santa Anita in February of 1996 to start his three-year-old campaign. Despite having made just three career starts, Grindstone went to New Orleans on March 17 for the Grade 3 Louisiana Derby at a mile and a 16th. Despite having nothing more than a maiden special weight victory to his name, Grindstone was dispatched as the 2-1 second choice behind local favorite Zarb's Magic. And it was Zarb's Magic who stood in Grindstone's way in the final furlong. Tony Bentley had the call.
And Grindstone takes the lead, but Zarb's Magic hangs in on the inside, but it will be Grindstone with the lead, and Zarb's Magic back in second. Grindstone wins the Louisiana Derby by four with Jerry Bailey.
With his victory that day, Grindstone was now part of discussions for the upcoming Kentucky Derby. But he was lightly raced, and no winner of the Louisiana Derby had won the Kentucky Derby since Black Gold in 1924. Grindstone would have one more prep race before heading to Churchill Downs. It would be the Arkansas Derby on April 13. It would be a step up to a Grade 2 and a stretch out to a mile and an eighth. Grindstone would enter the starting gate as the 8-5 favorite, but once again he would have to deal with Zarb's Magic in the stretch. Terry Wallace brings them home.
And it is Grindstone who now has the lead. Zarb's Magic fighting back at the rail, and Zarb's Magic comes back on, takes the lead at the eighth pole, and it is Zarb's Magic on his way. He is a length in front, heading for the Arkansas Derby winner's circle, an upset.
Grindstone was only beaten in the neck that day, but he would be heading to the Kentucky Derby with a lot of questions surrounding him. For one thing, Grindstone had only made five career starts. No horse had won the Kentucky Derby on five starts or less since Broker's Tip in 1933. For another, he wasn't even necessarily the best in his trainer's barn. Dwayne Lucas would be sending a record five horses to the Derby, and Lucas himself was reluctant to rank one above another. As for the rest of the lineup, there was Unbridled Song, who would be the post-time favorite. There was Cavaneer from the West Coast being prepped by a young trainer by the name of Bob Baffert. There was Skipaway, who had just set a stakes record in the bluegrass at Keeneland. On the first Saturday in May 1996, Grindstone would have to overcome history. He would have to overcome highly touted and more experienced foes, and he would have to make a furious run in the final furlong. But jockey Jerry Bailey had him in high gear. Dave Johnson of ABC Sports with the call.
Out the middle of the track, Grindstone is closing stoutly. It's Cavaneer on the inside and Grindstone on the outside. McCarron and Bailey, here's the finish. Too tight to call. Was it Cavaneer on the inside? Was it Bailey with Grindstone on the outside? Noses apart after a mile and a quarter in the Kentucky Derby.
Grindstone and Cavaneer hit the wire together, and it took 5 minutes for the placing judges to confirm the result of that photo finish. But the winner of the 122nd run for the Roses was Grindstone. As one sports writer put it, the Kentucky Derby distance is 79,000 inches. And by getting his nose in front of the wire, Grindstone had led only the final four, but it was all that he needed. 5 days later, Lucas announced that Grindstone had been retired from racing following the discovery of another bone chip in the colt's knee. It made Grindstone the first horse in 70 years to be retired immediately following a win in the Kentucky Derby. But he also had become the first horse in 72 years to win both the Louisiana Derby and the Kentucky Derby. He had won the first $1 million Kentucky Derby in history. He had given Lucas his sixth consecutive win in a Triple Crown race. And he had made W.T. Young a Kentucky Derby winning owner and breeder. "I was never prouder to stand next to Mr. Young," said Lucas, adding, "This is absolutely the happiest I've ever been in my life." As a stallion, Grindstone would become the sire of Belmont winner Birdstone and the grandsire of classic winners Mind That Bird and Summer Bird. Following his stallion career in Kentucky, he would relocate to Oregon in 2010, where he would sire more stakes winners in the Pacific Northwest. But the legacy of Grindstone began 25 years ago this month with a win in the Louisiana Derby. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, hard to forget Grindstone. My thanks to Kurt for putting that segment together and to Keeneland and Lane's End for their sponsorship each week. You can catch a stroll through racing history right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network on the Equine Forum program. And, of course, if you miss any of those or any of the In the Room segments with Sean Clancy, you can listen to the podcast archive of those posted on our website every week at horseracingradio.net. When I come back, it is time for this week's Industry Star of the Week, a special visit with George Wolfe Memorial Award winner, Deshaun Parker. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of Stakes.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the grade three poker and dominating the competition in the grade one Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Concert Tour is now four lengths in front, and Concert Tour is running them off their feet in the Rebel. Concert Tour, five lengths in front. Hosier Mike gets second. Eight Rebels for Baffert Concert Tour.
Concert Tour. Yeah, the son of Darley Stallion Street Sense cruised to victory in the $1 million Rebel Stakes on Saturday at Oaklawn. His second consecutive Grade 2 win, and that makes Concert Tour your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense is red hot in 2021. Three-year-olds sired by Street Sense have now won five black-type races already this year. Only Into Mischief, with six black-type wins by his three-year-olds, can top him. Learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Been a very busy program, and I wrap it up in a very special way, and that's with this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. Remember, Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is indeed your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales, and especially the sales coming up throughout the summer. Well, this week's Industry Star of the Week, I mentioned it's a special interview. It really is, because anytime you have an opportunity to visit with the George Wolfe Memorial Award winner, it's a privilege. And I have the privilege now of welcoming in jockey Deshaun Parker, who this past week got the news he would receive that award, and he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Deshaun, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. I definitely appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. You look at your resume, you see 5,843 wins. Not bad for a kid from Cincinnati, Ohio, huh?
No, and plus I probably, this is something, you know, riding horses wasn't something I really planned on doing. So, I mean, that's great for, you know, coming from Cincinnati, not knowing what I want to do and just being able to do what I love now.
Riding horses wasn't something you planned on doing. So how did you end up doing it?
Well, I've grown up around the racetrack, you know, with my dad and everything, and he was the clerk of scales at Thistledown, and I used to be able to sit in the room when I was a kid. I just loved, you know, everything about the jockeys and everything like that. So I was getting close to 16, and I was still light enough, but, I mean, I was taller. And my dad said, hey, just give it a shot, you know, ride a couple races, get it out your system, and then, you know, that way you could say you did it and enjoyed it and everything like that. So I said, yeah. So I got to ride a couple races, and after the couple, I just got the bug, and I just wanted to keep doing it. I just couldn't, you know, give it up after that. So I got lucky enough that my dad was, you know, behind me and telling me, you know, if I want to do it, to go for it. So that's what I've been doing ever since.
What else do you think you might be doing if you didn't pursue this career as a jockey?
I have no clue. I honestly don't. My grandmother used to always tell me, you know, getting ready for college and everything like that, and I always told her, you know, I would like to go to college, but I don't think I'm smart enough for college. And she said, oh, you can do it. And she said, what college would you like to go to? I said, well, if I'm going to go to college, I want to go to University of Hawaii. That way I can enjoy Hawaii. But other than that, I really couldn't tell you what I would be doing. I mean, like I said, when I started when I was 16, I've been doing it ever since, so I never really thought about doing anything else.
Tell me about getting the call that you were going to be the recipient of this year's George Wolfe Memorial Award.
Oh, that was a great call. I mean, I needed it, too, after, you know, the last couple of weeks and everything. So, I mean, it was a call that I was, you know, happy to hear. I love hearing it just because of, you know, my peers and everything voted on it. And I got lucky, you know, I know a lot of riders and just traveling around lately and got to meet a lot of great friends. So, I mean, this just means a lot.
Yeah, this is an award, Deshaun. You mentioned that your peers, the jockeys, vote on this award, which makes it even more special. But this is an award that doesn't mean necessarily that you are the greatest rider in the world, but it means that you are a great person who has represented the sport in a fashion that's deserving of having your name associated with a jockey like George Wolfe. So tell people about what this award actually means to you.
It means everything. It's just like, it's, you know, like George Wolfe. I just, me, myself, as a jockey, I try to help everyone that I can help, you know, as a young rider coming in. When I was starting out, I had all the older riders like Roberto Rivera, and he taught me a lot. I mean, a lot of the older riders sat me down and told me to do this and do that and, you know, watch this and watch that. So I kind of felt like that's what I should do to help people, and then, you know, coming up as an apprentice jockey and stuff like that, and try to help them out the same way I was told, you know, and I mean, you know, just try to let everybody know that we're riders, and I mean, we learn every day. It's not something that we can say we master, because if you think you've mastered it, then you might need to be out of the sport, because I don't think you ever master being a jockey. There's a lot of times that we make mistakes all the time, and we try to, you know, we watch the races and we, you know, come back and make it better if we can. So I mean, I just try to, you know, explain that to a lot of the younger riders too, that, you know, we're going to always make mistakes. It's just whether you can handle it and, you know, get back on that horse. And, you know, like an older guy told me, like, when you get off that horse, turn the page. There's another, you know, there's the next one waiting for you. So you got to, you know, just keep your head up and just keep doing what you love and just keep doing it. And like I said, I was taught from the older riders, and I feel like I'm, you know, kind of a veteran rider now, that I should kind of, you know, help out other riders. And like I said, I still, you know, talk to other riders and take advice from other riders all the time too. So, I mean, that's just something that I think that we ought to do as individuals. And plus, we all out there for the same thing, to try to win. And I mean, if we all do it, you know, a safe way and everything, then we're doing it the right way. So, and like I said, I've met a lot of riders that I love, and I mean, they're great friends, and it just means a lot that they, thought enough of me to, you know, say, hey, he deserves this award. So,
yeah, I mentioned the number of wins, more than 5,000 wins in your career. People might not realize that when they hear the name Deshaun Parker. You have been very, very good for a very, very long time. In 2010, you became the first African-American rider since 1895 to lead all American jockeys in races won. Deshaun, what did that mean to you?
That was a lot of work, too. Me and my agent, we were going up and down the road riding day and night. But it was fun. Anytime you're winning, it's fun. So, it was definitely really a lot of fun doing that. And we were second a couple years behind Ramon Dominguez and Russell Bays at the time. And we were, trying so hard to get that. And once we got it, it was just, the best thing. I've been lucky in my career. Like I said, I never thought that I would be able to be riding as long as I have, and not only that, but accomplish a lot of things that I have accomplished. And I just feel grateful, that I was able to do it. A tall kid, people, when I come to the paddock, they're not looking at me as a jockey. They're looking at me like, man, he should be playing basketball or something. So it just feels great to be able to do and to have done everything that I've done so far. And like I said, I'm not done yet, so I'm going to keep trying to go out and get more. But, the awards that I've won so far, this George Wolf Award, it just puts it right up there as one of the best just because of, everything that it stands for.
Yeah, and the circumstances surrounding it. You mentioned the last couple of weeks have been very difficult. Your dad passing away just a couple of weeks ago. And I told you, we had a conversation when I called you and asked you to join me here on the program, that your story is so similar to mine. Because this coming Monday, will be 11 years since I lost my father to cancer back in 2010. And I remember that was the year that we were honored with our very first Eclipse Award here on the network. And I remember how emotional it was for me, thinking back on my dad and everything he had taught me over the years. So for you, same thing. You referred to your dad as your idol and your best friend. And I can imagine that added a whole nother level to what this was all about.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I got the call, I actually cried because, when I was nominated for it, my dad was in the hospital, and I told him, I said, you got to get better, so hopefully I can win this award, and we can take that trip out to California, me and you, and, accept this award. And he's like, oh, yeah, babe. My dad always called everybody babe. He said, oh, yeah, babe, that sounds great and everything. So when Daryl called me and told me that I won the award, I honestly broke down and cried. I just felt so bad just because I wanted my dad to go with me. But I know that he knew that he couldn't be with me that way, but he's with me in a different way. So, I just look at it that way, and he's always going to be with me. So I'm just keeping that, that thought. But, like I said, it was definitely emotional just because I wanted him to be there for me, and we had just talked about it a little bit before in the hospital and everything. So it really was a hard thing to take. It was tears of joy, don't get me wrong, but I know my dad's looking down on me, telling me, go get it. And that he's probably even telling me I deserve it. So, I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah, very deserving. Talking with Deshaun Parker, the recipient of the 2021 George Wolf Memorial Award. Deshaun, you mentioned earlier that you're not done yet. I mentioned you're 50 years old. You still got a lot of things that drive you and motivate you. What are some of the things that when you get up in the morning are still driving Deshaun Parker to be great?
Honestly, I just love the game. I've been in it so long, and I just love riding. Everybody keeps saying, man, when are you going to retire? Don't you have enough? And I'm like, I could tell everybody, it's hard to stop when you're winning, and I feel like I'm still winning, so I can't give it up. I just love the thrill of going out there riding, and especially when you win, that's the biggest thrill, and I just can't give it up right now. Hopefully I have a few more years to keep going, and hopefully I can get lucky and keep winning.
Yeah, well, you've done an awful lot of that, and I know there are a lot more wins in your future, and this award is going to be coveted by you. And if folks weren't familiar with Deshaun Parker before this interview, I hope that they are now, and I hope they realize what a wonderful person that you really are and the work that you do giving back now to other jockeys who are coming up through the ranks, as you talked about earlier, just spectacular. I played a little race call earlier, a short stretch call, of you winning your 5,000th race, and I believe that was at Mountaineer. I think Peter Barry was the announcer, and he referred to you as the gentleman jockey.
That was a great call.
Yeah, fantastic, right? And the gentleman jockey is so appropriate for somebody like you, Deshaun. And I really can't thank you enough for taking the time here this morning. Again, congratulations on this award and everything you've accomplished in your career, and let's keep it rolling.
Thank you. I really appreciate everything. I definitely appreciate everybody out there, too. Thank you.
All right, wonderful. Congratulations to Sean Parker, this week's Industry Star of the Week, well-deserving and fantastic individual, really good rider, too. And my thanks to him for taking the time to be with me here this morning. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love. Embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'm back to wrap it up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judd Mott Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale. At Alapa.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park will reopen on a limited basis to the general public beginning Friday, April 2nd, with the Grade 1 $750,000 Run Happy Santa Anita Derby highlighting a blockbuster card on Saturday, April 3rd. Please visit santaanita.com for details. And don't forget, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via a variety of ADW platforms, including First Bet. That's first.com/bet. In addition to reopening to the public on April 2nd, first post time has now been moved to 1 p.m. This Saturday, March 20th, our main event is the Grade 3 San Luis Rey for older horses at a mile and one half on turf. Again, first post time Saturday and Sunday is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest at 11:50 a.m. as they analyze each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, remember to follow the road to the Kentucky Derby, plus have the latest breeding, sales, and industry news and analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more, all at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. Blood Horse Daily has the largest subscriber base of any thoroughbred industry electronic daily newsletter, and all you have to do is go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up. Both of those are free. Well, a couple of notable highlights in racing history before I wrap up this edition of the show for you. It was March 20th, 1932, that Farlap, the legendary champion racehorse of Australia, won his only start in North America. That was the Agua Caliente handicap at Agua Caliente Racecourse in Mexico. Also on March 20th, it was 1969. Less than 2 months after she became the first woman to ride in a paramutual race in America, Diane Crump rode her first winner at Gulfstream Park. So these are memorable anniversaries for each of those occasions. Some birthday wishes to send out this week to a couple of Triple Crown winners. On Tuesday, that's March 23rd, it will be the birthday of Gallant Fox. He was born in 1927. The future Triple Crown winner was foaled at Claiborne Farm in Paris, Kentucky. And another Triple Crown winner, foaled at Claiborne Farm, was born this coming Wednesday, March 24th, 1932. It was Gallant Fox's son, Omaha, the only Triple Crown winner to be sired by another Triple Crown winner, born at Claiborne, March 24th, 1932. My thanks to all of our guests for helping to make this show possible. Ed DeRosa kicked it off for you at 8:15 Eastern to handicap all the big races. If you missed any portion of the show, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. Chris Griffin, the announcer at Sam Houston, previewed their Texas Champions Night, which kicks off later this evening. Jockey Joe Talamo was here in the second hour of the program, along with trainer Mike Stidham. Our Unsung Heroes segment, presented by Claiborne, featured my interview with Lena L'Oreal, and she was fantastic. The longtime exercise rider for Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee, a deserved unsung hero. We went in the room with Sean Clancy at 10 o'clock. That was an unbelievable interview with Ramon Dominguez that'll be posted on our website later today. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history came your way in the second or the third hour of the program, and then that interview with Deshaun Parker just a short time ago. My thanks to all of them for taking time to make this show possible this morning. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, and our Lexington studio for handling all of our production stuff today, and to my beautiful wife, Michelle, who filled in for Chauncey on the social media side. Poll question, the results going to Mandaloon. 39% of you saying you think he is going to be the winner of today's Louisiana Derby. Hard to argue with that. He's really good. We'll talk to you next week on the Equine Forum. Thanks for listening. Hey, Juju is back in the house. Go Steelers.